for listening to the Gut Munchers Internet Podcast.
Well, welcome to episode 4 of the Gut Munchers Podcast. We got something a little different for you this time around. This is going to be our very first staff meeting. And what that is the Gut Muncher staff meeting will be a few of us just sitting around talking about a subject that we've all decided to discuss. And this time around, we're going to talk some slasher films. The people that are joining me are my good friend Ed. How's it going, Ed?
Very good. How's everybody doing?
Excellent. And my other good friend,
Steve.
Hey now.
How you doing, Steve?
I'm pretty good.
Well, I mean, before we launch into our discussions, I just thought it was interesting why this topic came up. And I know I had been talking to Ed, and I had been talking to you, Steve, and we were just kind of chatting. And I realized we all recently, within the last few months, went through this phase where we just, like, started eating up slashers, going back and watching our old favorites and trying to find new ones we hadn't seen yet. And I just, you know, I don't know. Do you guys think it's the fact that the Friday the 13th remake and the My Bloody Valentine remake came out, and then I guess, I mean, I didn't see the remake, but you guys might have, but I will say that the fact that the My Bloody Valentine uncut came out, and then the Friday the 13th, the first three movies came out on DVD, did get me fired up. What about you guys?
Yeah, it's same with me. It was definitely basically, you know, being with the year coming upon 2009, it was about to be like the year of the slasher, like you said, with My Bloody Valentine and Friday the 13th coming out, plus a lot of the re-releases. So, and it even started a little bit before that for me, but I'm always digging through old movies and stuff, and it just seems like over the last couple months, it's been a lot of slashers.
What about you, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, I have tons of movies laying around, so, you know, a lot of them, if I hear something I've never seen before, that kind of makes me interested, and a lot of those are slashers that I kind of missed because I was a little too young. So, you know, if I could find something that I have never seen before, I'm definitely going to try to watch it.
Cool. Well, I mean, yeah, I thought it was all interesting. We all got into them at the same time. So that's sort of, you know, for everybody out there wondering, I should say, why we decided to do a slasher show as our first staff meeting. I don't know. It's just kind of something we are into, so that's kind of the flow that we go with here at the Gut Munchers Podcast. So, yeah, okay. Why don't we take a quick break, when we get back, we'll launch into our top five list. Oh, but you know what? I actually probably should lay down the groundwork of the show first. My bad. What we did, you know, hey, that's how we roll here, because, I mean, if you're expecting a professional podcast, yeah.
Then we would be getting paid to do this if it was professional.
We're not getting paid, so you get what you get. It's like tell everybody, you get what you pay for, and it's free.
No, wait a minute. You're not paying us for this?
No.
God damn it.
No, well, but I mean, I think it is a barter system. I think Steve agreed to spoon with you at Wasteland.
Oh, man. Well, see. this is the sad thing. It's slashers. We haven't even got 10 minutes into it, and we've managed to gay this whole thing up.
Yeah. Let's talk about boobs to make it better.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if there's not any boob discussion in this show, I have no idea what slashers we all picked.
Don't worry. Actually, boob size and structure actually factored very heavily on my top five. So.
But basically, Ed mentioned a top five. What we're going to do is each of us picked our top five slashers. And we're going to start at the bottom of that list, and we're going to take turns announcing our lists as we go up through them. So, you know, just that's kind of what we're going to do. And I guarantee you we'll probably get off the beaten path on more than one occasion if I know us at all. We'll probably wander quite a bit. But you know, like I said, that's just how we roll here. So, anyway, now that I did what I forgot to do, and we managed at least one gay joke already.
True.
Which, you know, it's pretty much that's all my material, guys, so I don't know.
It's par for the course here.
Yeah. we're going to take a quick break now, and when we come back, We'll start at the bottom of our list and announce. I'll start with announcing my number 5 slasher of all time. So we'll be back right after this on the Gut Munchers podcast.
Halloween. Newsweek magazine calls it a superb exercise in the art of suspense, the most frightening flick in years. Halloween. The Chicago Sun-Times says it's so scary, I would compare it to Psycho. It's the kind of picture, says the Chicago Tribune, that forces you to sleep with the lights on. A masterpiece, says New York's New Times. Halloween, from Compass International, rated R.
Well, we're back. Thanks for listening to our commercials and some of the vintage commercials I like to play. So I hope you enjoyed those. Let's go ahead and jump right in. I'm going to start at the bottom of my list. My number five all-time slasher movie, in my opinion. Actually, and it's kind of funny that it's this one because it sort of meshes with some stuff that I was ripping on some guys about here. But Sleepaway Camp, the original one. That's my number five slasher. If you guys haven't seen Sleepaway Camp, it's your typical slasher film. Not typical. Kind of plays like a typical slasher film. Oh, and you know what? I forgot to mention one other thing before, and this is a good place to start as well. If you have not seen the movies that we are discussing, and you are worried about spoilers, turn off your iPod right now. I'm going to give you 3 seconds. One Mississippi. 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi. Okay, we are, guys, and I just let you guys know right now, man, don't worry about spoilers. They have been warned. Sleepaway Camp kicks butt. I like it. It's got one of the best endings ever in a slasher film. The kills are okay, but really for me, the ending, and this is one of the ones that I do go back and show people, and I love watching people watch it for the first time. And for those who haven't seen it, it's about... Well, it's a summer camp, and people get picked off one at a time, and you know there's something squirrely going on, and there's this little girl named Angela that gets picked on constantly, and basically it plays pretty much like your typical slasher film until the end, where the final scene is Angela standing up, fully nude, holding the head of the boy who had a crush on her, and you find out that Angela has a penis. She's a boy. And there was an accident earlier in the movie that kind of sets this all up, where you see a dad and you think his son get killed, and only the daughter lives. And you find out later, actually, the daughter died and the son lived, but the mom couldn't handle it, so she dressed the little boy up like a little girl, gave him mental issues, and eventually he killed people. So that's my number five. What do you guys think?
I love Sleepaway Camp. I swear to God, every time I see Sleepaway Camp, it reminds me of, like, you know, a bunch of guys were in a room trying to come up with a movie, and they thought it was a good idea to take a shitload of acid during doing this, and somebody just along the stupid way just said, like, hey, let's give the girl a dick, and then somebody's like, yeah, let's do that, and, you know, but that movie's awesome. I love that movie.
Yeah. What about you,
Steve? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was one that slipped away from me. I didn't see that until like a few years ago. And I the beginning of it is very Friday the 13th-ish as far as just the look of it. The story's a little different, but it's just the look of it. But, yeah, you know, no one had spoiled that movie, which is kind of wild, all those times that, been on the internet. And then, you see the end of it and it's pretty, pretty shocking.
Yeah. And that was the thing for me that I really liked about it is because, you know, I agree with something you said, Steve. It is very Friday the 13th-ish. I mean, there were so many of these movies that basically said, okay, let's put a killer in a summer camp and knock a bunch of people off. You know, a lot of them did it. I just, for me, it's got such a great ending, and it did have that twist, and they probably were dropping some acid, but it's brilliant. I just thought it was brilliant. Unlike a lot of people, I do like the first two sequels, but I'm not as hot on them as I am on the first one. I just think the first one really is the bomb and is, for me, just a great movie. So, but that was my number five, Sleepaway Camp. So if you're keeping track and writing it down, John's number five was Sleepaway Camp. So, Ed, what's your number five?
First off, let me start off by telling you that, like, when I was putting all this together, this is one of the hardest fucking things I've ever had to do. When you actually narrow it down, I mean, it's really difficult.
Yeah.
So, with my top five, I feel it necessary that I explain that the reason why I put these five movies this way is because I thought there was something specifically unique about the movie that put it above other films. The number five one that I picked, and this actually would have changed recently because of a recent DVD release, but my number five slasher is from 1981, and it features everybody's favorite deranged minor, Harry Warden, My Bloody Valentine.
Excellent choice. Excellent choice.
I absolutely love this movie. I remember the first time I ever saw this movie, I was probably about 10 years old. And the only reason I even cared to watch this movie at that point was because the killer was cool looking. So, and it has the minor look, and I love that. I love the atmosphere and the setting that this movie has. But the thing that took it over the top and actually put it in my top five was the recent DVD release that they put out with the extra bonus footage and the extra gore scenes. Because I thought it was a pretty solid slasher movie to begin with, but you add in the extra gore and everything, and it almost changes the character of Harry Warden to being like a complete psychopath to being completely fucking maniacal. And I absolutely love that about this movie. I mean, I think it has the gore, the atmosphere, great-looking killer, cool story, cool legend behind the whole thing, and I really like the end and everything. But yeah, my number five is My Bloody Valentine.
That's cool. You know, it's funny, too, because I always loved this movie, even before I've seen the restored gore. I mean, that just made it an even better movie, but I've always been with you. I thought it was a great movie. And then it was just made even better with the gore footage restored. And you know the sad fact is, dude, is there's still some footage that's missing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm assuming because this is just an assumption. I'm not 100% sure or anything, but I'm assuming whatever they have left is probably not salvageable. That's why they didn't put it in there. Or it's completely gone then?
I saw an interview with the director, and you know where you see the couple and they've got the drill jammed through them?
Mm-hmm.
They actually shot that, according to him, and that's gone. They have no idea where that went.
Yeah, and see, that's unfortunate, too, because this is something that's actually happened a few times with films, and I can't say whose fault it is, but I would assume that it's Paramount. But even with My Bloody Valentine and several of the Friday the 13th films, they've completely disposed of extra footage for these movies that people really wanted, and that's just kind of sad. But, I mean, at least with My Bloody Valentine, though, we do have a better edition, I think, than what was out there before.
Yeah. So what do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, this is another one that I kind of hadn't watched, in a very long... I think I saw it when I was like 18, well, 20-something, and then revisited it a year ago. And, I watched the previous version, and then when you get the DVD, really amped up everything. I mean, with all the restored footage, it's just... this made a good movie a lot better.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. See, it was weird because another movie that really I was struggling with to put on this list, and I didn't know where to put it, and it actually didn't make my top five, believe it or not, but it was The Burning. And it was another movie that was just like that. It like when the DVD releases came out, they had a bunch of extra footage on them, or at least some extra footage. And it definitely was like watching the movie again for the first time. Like the footage was that much of a difference. And I know that people are kind of, you'll hear people say like, well, what the hell is a big deal about an extra minute of footage or an extra this or that? I'll tell you what, I just watched recently the Friday the 13th uncut. There's only 10 extra seconds in that movie, but it makes a world of difference.
Well, and you know, anybody that says that, they have never seen the two different versions of My Bloody Valentine because it's more than a few minutes. They butchered that movie.
I mean, let me just ask you guys this because this is just something that I thought about it. But I mean, you guys have both seen it before the footage and after the footage, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Don't you guys think that the extra added gore in the movie actually makes Harry Warden a hell of a lot more of a maniac than he even was to begin with?
Yeah, definitely. The character becomes less cartoonish and more scary because he's really screwing people up. He's really butchering people.
Yeah, it's more violent, and I mean, you get to see the action, so it's just a lot better.
Well, excuse me. Sorry about that. I got a little frog in my throat. But, you know, for me, though, the other thing that kind of killed me about this movie is it should have had the most iconic kill, or one of the most iconic kills in slasher movie history. And it just, until it was restored, you just never got to see it. And that was the shower head.
Yeah.
That was with the water and bam. I mean, and I remember, I'm old enough that I actually saw the Fangoria before I saw the movie and knew that there should be some stuff in there. And then when I got to see the movie, I'm like, what happened?
Yeah. It's, you know what, it's sad because the MPAA in the 80s seemed to catch up to some movies and not other ones. It's real sketchy on how they did things. Like, if you notice, like, because My Bloody Valentine's one of the early slashers. So at that point, technically, the MPAA hadn't caught on. But, you know, as further the 80s would go, they would get more neutered and neutered. But it always amazed me that they did cut some of the stuff out of this movie that they did.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just kind of just very disappointing when I saw it. And now that I've seen it restored, it made a huge difference. So. But
totally agree. Right.
Steve, you're up. Your number five is
Sleepaway Camp.
Excellent. Great minds think alike.
Evidently. Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking about all the different paths, and I mean, you know, that one just, you know, pretty much there's a lot of cool kills in that, and so I mean, the kids actually look pretty young in the movie too, so that kind of added a little difference than like Friday the 13th, where we're just dealing with all camp counts.
Yeah, I never thought about that, but that was a point actually. I think we should make, which is, I think Sleepaway Camp is the first slasher movie that I saw where they actually kill kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another thing too about Sleepaway Camp that I always liked is the character Ricky, Jonathan Tiersten, which is Angela's, you know, relative, obviously, in the movie. But yes, is it cousin?
I think it's a cousin.
Okay, but the thing is with that is, like, they let him go all out. I mean, the character's vulgar, and I mean, it's basically a teenage kid, you know what I mean? So it's kind of nice to see, like, I mean, with everything in this movie, from, you know, the one sleazy cook guy that is just constantly trying to nail young girls. I mean, everything about this movie's sleazy. And I kind of like that. I mean, dude, it's when people compare it to Friday the 13th, it is a fair comparison because of where they're set. But, I mean, it's almost like somebody sat down and watched Friday the 13th and said, how can we do this and, like, make it so much more sleazy?
Yeah, true. Well, Steve, since your number five was similar, and I don't want this to happen to you again, drum roll, please. Let's move on to our number four. And what's your number four?
My number four, I just got a release this year, an awesome release on DVD. It's called Pieces. I love that movie, and I happen to get a copy of a better version that's you know, on the public domain set. So I happened to watch it for the first time almost, because I hadn't remember seeing it in the past. So definitely something that's over the top, and it's just a lot of fun.
Wow, dude, you know, that's funny because Pieces is one of those movies that I didn't even think about as a slasher film. I've almost always considered it kind of an exploitation film more. And it's definitely, I mean, it's definitely a slasher flick, but yeah, dude, it is. It's crazy over the top, and that ending, man, that friggin' ending with the corpse is just like, that still gets me even though when I know it's coming.
You know what? I have to give you a lot of credit, Steve. I'll be honest. Because Pieces is one that I wanted to put on my top five. You have no idea how bad I wanted to put Pieces on my top five. I just couldn't do it. It would be in a top 10 of mine. And the movie is just so goddamn bizarre and so much fun. And I know a lot of people, I know I've told you this before, John. A lot of people say that Troll 2 is like the best worst movie ever. You know what? Fuck that. Pieces is the best worst movie ever. I don't care what anybody says.
Well, dude,
it's got nudity in it and then gore. So,
well, two things. Number one, the best worst movie, Troll 2 is a piece of shit. I have difficulty sitting through it. I get no enjoyment out of it all. I don't really consider Pieces to be a bad movie. Pieces is just, it doesn't make any sense, and it's completely out there. But I think Pieces is what it's what it is. I mean, it's just craziness. It's just gore for the sake of gore. And speaking of gore, before I just want to make one more point. Is it just me, or is that scene with the chainsaw and the girl in the shower extended in the extended in the Grindhouse Releasing DVD? Which, by the way, let's plug Grindhouse Releasing.
Hell yes.
They rock. All of their releases kick ass, and this is one of their releases, and it kicks much ass. But that scene looks like it's extended because it's a lot bloodier. That, and I think there's one in the elevator, too, that seems a little longer.
Yeah, and I also, the scene in the swimming pool on the new DVD is so much better. It's so much better. I mean, you can actually see everything. And and that's something else, too, that I got a kick out of watching the Grindhouse DVD. Did you guys notice? Steve, I don't know if you've seen the Grindhouse version of it, but I know John has. Did you notice all the damn movie posters that show up in this movie?
Yeah, I got the Grindhouse. Okay. Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, there's like I think there's a Friday the 13th poster in the background at one point. There's definitely something else, too. I just don't remember what they are.
Well, and then I forget what. Oh, yeah.
It's the Patriots thing.
Patriots. And the movie opens up in like the 40s? And the little kid has a pennant for the New England Patriots in his room. And I'm sitting there going, and it's just me being picky because I know this. I think this is an Italian film. They wouldn't know any better. But I'm just like, wow, man, that kid was awesome. He knew about the Patriots like almost 20 years before they ever existed. So,
dude, you know what? I've come to a conclusion because I've loved this movie for a long time, and I've tried to read as much stuff as I can, and I think I understand completely why it makes no sense. Okay, it's a Spanish director, and it's a movie that was co-written by Joe D'Amato. Okay, wow. If you've ever seen anything done by Joe D'Amato, it's rough enough as it is, but then you get a Spanish director, you throw Christopher George in the mix. And by the way, I've seen this movie 100 times, and last time I watched it was the first time I noticed it. But like Linda George is pretty fucking hot.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, man. I'm with Ed on this one, Steve. Big props, dude. I mean, he thought about it. I didn't even think about it as a slasher film. And that's what's great about this because, dude, I agree with you, Ed. Picking five was a bitch.
10 I could have did. 10 would have been fairly easy, I think.
I don't know, dude. I think even 10, when you got to, like, spot 7, 8, and 9 and 10, there'd probably be a lot of stuff competing for those bottom spots.
Yeah. But absolutely.
Yeah, dude. Much props for Pieces. That's a great choice. Great.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So, appreciate you.
Well, I'm going to give my number 4.
Okay.
And I will wager a lot of money that I'm probably the only person that's going to mention this film, and I'm probably going to catch some heat for it. But I love it.
I know it. I already know what it is.
All right, take a guess.
And let's just say it has something to do with George Kennedy.
Ah, damn it. Yeah, you're right. my number 4 slasher film is, to me, probably the best backwoods slasher film I've ever watched, and I love it. And that would be the Jeff Lieberman classic, Just Before Dawn, with, yes, George Kennedy and crazy rednecks, hillbillies, and I love this movie. I love the minimalist soundtrack. I love the crazy rednecks. I love the twist, again, where they don't make it obvious till pretty far into the movie, because there's parts where it seems like this one crazy hilljack is everywhere,
mm-hmm.
and then partway through the movie they just go, well, you know, they're twins. There's two of them, and then you're like, oh, mm-hmm. shit, okay, that's how he's everywhere. But it's a crazy inbred family. There's these campers that go up on this mountain. George Kennedy, you know, is the park ranger who has to go up on the mountain and 'cause. All right, movie opens up. These two hunters are out there. One of the hunters gets killed. The other hunter tries to warn them not to go up on the mountain when he runs into the campers. They ignore him and keep on driving in their big RV. The hunter gets down to George Kennedy's cabin, who's the park ranger, and says, they're killing him. And Kennedy knows something's going on, so he goes up after him. And too late. A lot of them get killed. Some of them don't get killed. It's a good movie, dude. I mean, I'm wandering here a bit. Oh, and my favorite part of the movie is the ending where she offs the killer. I love that scene. So what do you guys think about Just Before Dawn?
I really like it. I mean, it was one I hadn't seen, again, but it is something pretty cool, you know, for like a backwoods kind of slasher movie. Yeah, I'm with you on that as far as the reveal of the twins is pretty pretty crazy. It kind of changes the story a lot. So, I mean, you know, I got Lieberman to sign a copy of it for me, so I really like that movie a lot.
Yeah, see, I do like the movie. I don't hate it by any stretch of the means. I think it's a solid slasher. I do have some issues with it. I don't think it's perfect by any means. It's unique in the fact that it has George Kennedy in it. It's a slasher film. I'll give it that. I do like the twist ending. I think that's pretty cool. The you know what disappoints me about, and it's not the movie actually. It has more to do with the DVD release. But there was a really cool 2-disc edition that Shriek Show put out years back, and there's a ton of shit on it. I mean, they really went all out for it. But the only problem is the damn movie is cut.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's all gore from what I've understood and read for the longest time. And my thing is, now see, this is kind of my new thing with slashers. When I've already seen, you know, a lot of them, when I hear that there's stuff cut, I always wonder after watching movies like The Burning and My Bloody Valentine, and they were so much better with the extra footage in, I wonder how much better this one would be with extra footage, if at all.
Well, you know, I was talking to Lieberman, and he doesn't. Jeff Lieberman's a director.
And
the last time he was at The Last Wasteland, I was chatting with him about it because I love this movie. He didn't seem to think it was that big of a deal. And he's kind of proud of the movie as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that'd be a huge deal. And you're right, man. This is really. I mean, if you're a gore hound and you're looking for bloody, gory effects, this is not the movie for you.
No.
But the last kill, and this is, excuse me again, just for people that are listening, the last kill of this movie is what really, like, I mean, for years I couldn't remember the title of the movie, but I remember that scene. And there's a man and a woman, and the woman always kind of gets treated like she's a little, I don't know, fragile. And the husband, played by Greg Henry, is always like, you know, I'll do this. Well, by the end of the movie, he's a wreck and he's useless. And the killer shows up, and his wife, who's like this little tiny nothing, he freezes, and she goes apeshit on this last killer, this big giant hill jack. And he's like got her up, and he's killing her. And dude, she just fists him right down the throat.
Yep.
She suffocates him by jamming her fist down his throat and just holding it there until he dies. And for me, that was the one thing. I'm just watching it going, I love the characters flipping that way. And it's kind of a gradual thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I love how the characters flip. And then I love that just jamming her fist down his throat and killing him. I thought that was pretty cool.
And I think, too, with Just Before Dawn, like there's a whole slasher subgenre of the backwoods slasher films. I think this one actually uses its scenery to its advantage the most. A lot of those movies, you know what I mean? It's just kind of people running through the woods. And the good thing about Just Before Dawn is a lot of this movie takes place during the day. And it's cool, the atmosphere and the whole, you know, it's really different how it's shown in this movie compared to other ones. I mean, it seems like Jeff Lieberman, I mean, if you've seen his other stuff, you know he's a solid director.
Yeah.
So I think he made it his... And it kind of reminds me of how Wes Craven uses, like, the whole atmosphere in The Hills Have Eyes. Even though it's just the background, there's a lot of scenes in the movie that are just put in there to show you where they're at. And they want to make it that these people are stuck here. You know what I mean? They want to get that across. So I do like that in the movie, too.
I also really like the soundtrack, which is they use a lot of natural sounds. They don't use a lot of music.
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch the movie and you're listening to it, if you really pay attention, it has a unique feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. So, but Steve, you got anything else to add for Just Before Dawn?
No, it's I wonder what Chris Lemon's father thought of the movie.
Yeah. I did forget there was one more famous person in there. And at the time, he's probably more worried, wondering whether his son was still wiped out on coke or something. Because a bit of a cokehead. So, well, Ed.
Okay.
Your number
four. Number four, it's my first movie from a franchise. I think this movie's been highly underrated for quite some time, and it's one of the best sequels, I think, ever in horror.
Let me guess.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Goes to Hell.
Right. That's right. Jason Goes to Hell is my number. No. but my number four pick is the highly underrated sequel to one of the greatest slasher films of all time, and that is Halloween 2. I absolutely love this movie. I think that, surprisingly, this movie comes off very John Carpenter-like. There's a lot of suspense in it. The gore is a little bit more than what's in the original film. But I just think it hits everything. I mean, it has some boobies, some good kills. Michael Myers is completely fucking indestructible in this one. It establishes the character of Dr. Loomis even more. And, like, I think in the second film, you can see that Dr. Loomis is about to be a staple in horror here for a long time. I just love the movie. I just think it works on so many levels. And what about you guys? Do you find it to be underrated, overrated, what have you?
This is one of the movies that I just had so much trouble leaving off my top five list, and I ended up leaving it off the top five. But I agree with everything you said. I love this movie. And for me, I think it's unique because it keeps a lot of the same tension that the first Halloween film did,
mm-hmm.
but it ramps the gore up.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about iconic. Who would have thought in a horror film one of the iconic things would be a shoe hitting the floor?
Yeah.
But
yep.
if you show a horror fan just that snippet of that shoe hitting the floor, they know what movie it is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And yeah, you're right. It really establishes the character of Michael Myers, establishes the character of Dr. Loomis. And I also would say, you might disagree with me on this, I think this is one of Jamie Lee Curtis's better movies, too, as far as horror films go.
Yeah.
The first Halloween is a brilliant movie, but she basically spends most of the time running around going, ah! And mm-hmm. this one's a little different for her. I think she gets a little more to do a little bit more.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool, too, because I think, like you said, in the first film, she's completely freaked out, like running around and everything. But in the second film, she's more composed, and it's kind of like, you know, that like it kind of gives more credibility to her character because she already lasted the first movie. So it's like, okay, she's still alive, dude. There's something special with this one. And it adds more to the final girl thing that we see so many in these movies. I just think that it hits on a lot of targets, man. And it was really, like you said about leaving it off the list, this is one of the reasons why I couldn't put something like Pieces on my list. As much as I love that movie, it's just, I think that Halloween 2 is one of the movies that gets by following the conventions of the slasher movie, and then maybe adding a couple other little things in here and there. And I just think it works tremendously.
What about you, Steve?
Well, I guess I have a differing opinion. I do like it, but, I haven't watched it in a little while, but it just seems to me it doesn't stand up to the original Halloween as far as, you know, I mean, just in every way. I mean, it does have, if you just strictly look at it as a slasher, then it's, you know, it's a good movie. But to me, I like, you know, some things are, I like simple stories. When we get more complex, it maybe get colluded, which I guess, these kind of movies are not going to win Oscars or anything, so I guess that's kind of a weird thing to bring up. But, like I say, I haven't watched it in a while. I need to revisit that one just to see if my opinion's changed. But I like it, but I don't think it's it would be in my top five.
Well, and not to give any spoilers for the list, I think, you know, again, I like Halloween 2 a lot, and I really, I think it's a great movie. But I can kind of see where you're coming from, and again, like I say, not to give any spoilers, but I do think that I did punish. Not punished so much, but I do think there's probably a couple of movies that got left off of my top five simply because they're sequels in a franchise. And I do think I probably maybe took a few. I think the reason that something like Just Before Dawn or Sleepaway Camp made my top five rather than Halloween 2 might have been because Halloween 2 was Halloween Part 2.
Well, you know what? Let me say this, too, because this was a problem I had when I was making my list. I was kind of struggling back and forth, and I think I even talked to you about it once, John, about, you know, just the sequels and everything. But you know what? When I was putting the list together finally, the thing is, I said to myself, okay, there's a lot of sequels here. And it's difficult to make a top five slasher film list, in my opinion, especially if you're just counting the Friday the 13th movies. Because there's so many good slashers in there. And, I mean, if you really want to be technical about it, they're better slashers than a lot of the stuff that is out there. So that's always difficult. But when I put Halloween 2 in there, the reason why I did that is because the thing is, I think a lot of slasher films took from the original Halloween, which is pretty evident in a lot of horror films. But when you watch a movie like Halloween 2, it's like watching Halloween with the Friday the 13th influence. And let's be honest, that's what most slasher films are. They're those two right. films combined. That's what they are. They might have a different character or another story arc or something, but at the end of the day, those are the two movies that they're taken from.
True. And I think we'll probably maybe bring this up a little bit later on when we talk just general slasher talk at the end of our list. But I almost think, and we've talked about this before too, I've said that a lot of people hate on some movies like I can't even think of some. But there's some movies, some slasher films out there that don't focus on gore
mm-hmm.
and try to be more of – you say they're either Friday the 13th and Halloween, some com. Well, I think there's the movies that try to be more Halloween and more suspenseful and less focused on gore actually later on get really just beat up for lack of gore. And it's like, well, you know, they were kind of going for more of a Halloween feel. And I think we talked about Final Exam that way too.
Yeah, and you know what, though? There is a disadvantage of doing that. It's like saying, oh, I'm making a new movie, and somebody's like, okay, well, what's it about? I'm like, well, it's kind of like a Hitchcock movie. It's like, well, fucking good luck, dude, because you're not Hitchcock.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Same thing with these. It's like that's why you see secondary films that are ripoffs of Halloween. It's like, well, how come this one isn't as good as Halloween? It's like, well, because John Carpenter wasn't involved with that one. It was some dude that used to make nudie flicks or, you know, whatever the fuck you want to call it. But it's a hard thing to live up to. And that's another reason, too. I'm glad you brought this up, John. That's another reason why I like Halloween 2 so much, because it's a director that, in all honesty, had no right to follow John Carpenter. And that movie had no right to be as good as it was. And I think that fact, added on to the fact that it's a follow-up to Halloween, is the reason why it's so underrated. Because people don't give it the credit it's deserved because they compare it to Halloween all the time. Or, you know, what have you. But you know what? Let's be honest. At the end of the day, too, let's compare, you know, Friday the 13th 7 to 1. I like both of them, but let's be honest, the 7's not really doing anything different. One, the first one, created a whole surge of horror films.
Absolutely.
So I guess it depends on the way you look at it.
Yep. Well, mm-hmm. Let's go ahead. I mean, those were our top bottom two on our top five list. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, why don't we have Ed start us off with his number three pick? How's that sound, Ed?
Ooh, sounds great.
Okay. So we will be back right after this on the Gut Munchers podcast.
Hello? Who's that? Oh, hi. What are you doing out in this mess?
One. Two.
You're doomed. You're all doomed.
Three.
We weren't doing anything. We were just messing up.
Four. Seven.
Can I help you? Hello?
Eight. Nine.
Friday, the 13th. You may only see it once, but that will be enough. Friday, the 13th.
Well, we're back. We're going to talk some more slasher films, and Ed's going to go ahead and start us off with his number three.
Number three.
So what do you got?
This one's an absolute classic in my mind. I think you guys would probably agree with me on this one. It's the first of a kind. It's from 1974. It's from the late director Bob Clark, and this one is Black Christmas. I absolutely love this movie. I think it's brilliant from beginning to end. I love the fact that you never find out who the killer is. It has, you know, a great, great cast to it, including John Saxon, who's in everything, but he is never bad in anything. And I just think it has a solid cast, great direction. It basically invented slasher films having the first person view. And I just think everything about this movie is so damn creepy and just so good that there was no way I could make a top five slasher list and not put this movie on there.
You know, dude, yeah, this is one of my, again, this is one of the ones that almost cracked my list. It in various incarnations as I was putting it together, it was on that list. And I agree with you. It is very good. Art Hingle's good in it, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's one of those things where I can't explain why I didn't make my list, but it is a great movie. It is a really great movie. So, have you seen it, Steve?
Oh, absolutely.
What do you think?
I like it. Like Ed said, it's kind of one of the only slashers where you don't see, you know, find out who the killer is. It is very suspenseful. So, I mean, that kind of makes up for, you know, any lack, you know, I don't think it has a lot of nudity or any nudity in it from what I can remember.
Nope.
Sorry, Ed?
No, I was going to say no nudity at all.
Yeah, so, I mean, I like it. I'm not going to say I love it, but, it's above average for us for sure.
Yeah, you know, to be fair, I will say this. I do think it drags a little bit, dude. Some of the stuff in the house seems to go on and on. But then the flip side of that is I don't think I've heard anything quite as creepy or as subtle as those damn phone calls.
Yeah, the phone calls, and this movie has one of my favorite scenes or images or whatever you want to call it in horror film history. And there's a scene where a girl walks into a room and the killer's in the closet. And it's basically just a shot of the closet door that's cracked open. And the only thing that's lit in the closet is the killer's eye. And I just think, see, the thing about this movie that I really like is, to me, it took, like a lot of the American slasher films, a lot of people that just watch slashers or don't really watch a lot of this stuff, don't realize that these films were 150% born out of the Italian giallo film. And
Right. The
thing is, I think Black Christmas and Bob Clark, being who he is and being a very smart filmmaker, took those films, or at least the idea of those films, and Americanized it without all the stabbiness of them. And not to say that that's the best way of going about it, but the thing is, I felt he took from the giallo movie but added more to it than a lot of other filmmakers ever did. And that's the reason why I like this movie. Plus the acting, the direction's brilliant. I just think it's creepy, it's atmospheric, and it's technically everything that a slasher isn't, but it's still a slasher movie. So I don't know. I just think it's incredibly different. Not too many movies since then are like it. So, you know, I give it credit for being what it is, and it's a movie that came out before all of them.
Well, and while it might not be bloody, the whole thing with the plastic bag.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the kill there. That is actually disturbing.
Very.
You're watching it and you're just like, wow, that is, you know, not like hard to watch, like, you know, in a left house, or last house on the left kind of way, but But it is a really effective kill. Like I said, though, I do think I'm kind of on the fence with this one as well. And the reason it didn't make my list is the other two I just never found to be slow at all. And I did go back and watch it, this one, and I did find it slow in a couple of spots. I do think there's some pacing issues, but it is still. I mean, you know, that's not saying the movie. I mean, it's in a top 10 easy. And I love Bob Clark. I think it's an iconic film, and it did actually inspire a lot of people. So it does have a place in history. For me, though, just as far as my tastes and quality, I had some issues with it. So, you guys, anything else? What about you, Steven? Anything else to add?
No, I mean, like I say, it is very suspenseful, and the plastic bags scene at the end is pretty terrifying, I guess would be a good word for it.
Cool. Well, let's talk about number three. Why don't you go ahead and give us your number three, Steve?
All righty. This one came out on DVD last year as well, I believe. It's Burning from, I believe, 1982.
Oh, yeah.
Cropsy. I like some Cropsy, yep. Do
you? I mean, this is, definitely a clone of Friday 13th, but I mean it amped up the violence and also amped up the nudity. I mean, this thing is crazy. I actually got the VHS from Amazon before I actually got the new DVD, so I had never seen it before, so it was very it's like, this is an awesome movie. I wish it was on DVD. There's a lot of crazy stuff in this movie.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of The Burning, too. The one thing, too, that and I'm happy you picked this one, because it barely did not make mine. I really wanted to put this one on it. But the thing is about The Burning that I always thought made it such a good movie is, unlike a lot of other slasher films, like when you look at the Friday the 13th movies, a lot of the victims in the movies are asshole teenagers that are smoking dope, doing shit that technically they shouldn't be doing. You know, so there's a little bit of leeway on seeing them get killed. You don't really give a shit. It's like, murder them. They're all a bunch of assholes anyway. But The Burning is not like that at all. The target victims for The Burning are young, teenage, preteen kind of kids, and they do not deserve to die. That's the thing about this movie that's so demented and evil, and it's like a total flip on what your average slasher film is, due to the fact that the victims are younger. They don't really, they're not asking for trouble, so to speak. And it's a revenge plot. And the one thing I like about that, too, is in the revenge plot, it's not so much that Cropsy's just trying to get back at the people who fucked him. He wants to kill everybody. He doesn't give a shit anymore. And I love that. I think that's what, and the fact that you said about the gore and everything in it, and the raft scene in the movie is one of the greatest slasher movie scenes ever.
Right.
So, great choice, man. Great choice.
Well, and here I'm going to be a little different, and this is really going to be a huge shock. When I was sitting down to talk, and I have the new DVD of The Burning. I had a bootleg of the Japanese Laserdisc, and so, I mean, I've seen The Burning, and I've liked The Burning, but for me, I almost have gotten to the point where I think The Burning might be one of the most overrated slashers out there. As far as not just in specific groups, but as like as a whole, I personally think The Burning is as popular as it is because it wasn't available for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I love the gore. The raft scene is amazing. That is killer. I do love the look of Cropsy. So I'm not saying the movie's not good. It is a good movie. But for me, it wasn't even sniffing the top five for me. I just think a lot of people talk about The Burning as much as they do because it wasn't available for so long. When it was available, it was chopped to hell. And I think it got a lot of a reputation there. For me, the raft scene is really great. Some of the kills are great. I actually think the Cropsy burn early on is really well done.
It is, yeah.
And, of course, that's not just because Savini talks about how they did that quite a bit, but I think that burn is really well done. And the scene where Cropsy first gets out and takes out the prostitute.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good scene. But there's a lot of stuff with the kids in that movie, setting them up until Cropsey starts knocking them off, that I just found just paint drying boring.
Well, see, the thing is that I love about this movie, and how I said before, but I'm a fan of giallo films, I think that the stock and slash scenes and the burning are probably the closest I've seen to a giallo film in American slasher movies. I don't think anything touches it as far as that goes. And to touch on something else you just said, John, too, another reason why I think this movie is so popular, I do think some of the reason why people talk about it is certainly it wasn't available. I mean, that's definite. But I think another reason why people talk about this movie a lot is the fact that Tom Savini did the effects. It's a slasher movie that he did the effects on. And let's be honest, man, people talk about The Prowler, too. The Prowler's a piece of shit. It's just basically a Savini effects reel. That's all that movie is. And the killer's cool. I'll give it that. But, I mean, that's what you have here. If Savini worked on it in this time period, people are going to talk about it. So, I mean, I think that's another big reason why people kind of get on it a lot, too, and say how cool it is and everything. But I actually really do like the movie. And I think it stands differently from a lot of these, too.
I love, like I said, the effects in this thing are top notch. They are really great. And the raft scene, that sequence is probably one of the best sequences, you know, in pretty much any slasher movie I've ever seen. Just the you know, if you think about the raft scene and how many effects, how many gags were used in such a short period of time in rapid succession, is he basically takes out this entire raft of kids. It's pretty awesome, dude. It is pretty awesome. But like I said, for me, it's better than The Prowler, so don't get me wrong there. The Prowler actually is almost unwatchable between the effect shots, which are awesome. But there's that whole part where they're setting up with the kids, and just for whatever reason, you know, it's like anything else. Those characters did not appeal to me, and they didn't hit with me. So I think if you don't, like, connect with those kids, or if you're not into that kind of part of the story, it just... I reckon it's just not going to work for you. And for me, it just didn't work for me. So,
fair enough.
But still a good movie. just for me, not a top five. My number three, which I'll just go ahead and throw out here now because we've already talked about it. But My Bloody Valentine, this would have been in my top five without the added effects. Just because I've always really loved the look of the killer, Harry Warden. I love the theme song. I love the twist. I love the setting of the mine shaft. I just love the whole movie. But with the effects in there, for me, it shot right up to number three. And it's kind of a bummer and it's kind of a drag too, because I almost feel had the launch, because look at the Friday the 13th, there we talked about the gore, but there was a good movie there too. I just feel like if My Bloody Valentine had the gore and gotten released the way it should have when it first came out, it might have been a franchise. I think what killed the child is that a franchise is being cut to hell.
Yeah, that and the fact that it was one of the movies that had something to do with the Canadian tax shelter stuff too.
Yeah, but they still could have been cranking out movies. I mean...
But it just makes me wonder if there would have been – because put it this way, around the time that My Bloody Valentine was being made, it's when Paramount was in full swing with slasher movies. They understood how to make money with them. They understood what they had to do with them. And let's be honest. I mean, outside of the Friday the 13th series, which has made them a shitload of money, they've been pretty lazy with really kind of getting on the bandwagon. Like, they don't have a problem making slasher films, or at that time, they didn't have a problem making slasher films on short money, as long as it's an easy production for them just to kind of crank it out. Because let's face it, they wanted the money to make other shit. So that's what they used it for. And it worked for them. Good for them. But I agree with you. It could have been a lot more than what it was had they had the mindset of actually trying to make a franchise out of it. I mean, I think that's what they're going to do now with My Bloody Valentine since the remake came out.
Well... Too little, too late for me.
You know? Yeah, I agree.
It won't be. I mean, you know, just wouldn't have been as cool as it would have been in the '80s. So, but since we'd already mentioned my number three, I'm going to start us off and just go ahead and jump in and start us off with number two. What do you guys think about that?
Works for me.
What do you think? All right, my number two slasher of all time is a classic movie, and again, it's one of those movies that I think I punished one of the sequels.
Oh yeah.
By not putting it on. But I personally think, and it's not as bloody as a lot of slasher films are, but it is the creepiest, scariest slasher film. And I don't care what anybody says, you cannot top this movie. And that movie would be my number two for creepiest, scariest one, Halloween. I love this movie. There's not as much blood, but there's so many. Him standing there in the with the sheet on his head. The kid getting pinned to the wall with a butcher knife. Just all these kills. You know, Jamie Lee Curtis telling the kids to go get help, and then Michael sitting up behind her. That shot where Loomis shoots him, he goes through the window and he goes and he sees he's gone. The music from Carpenter, everything about this movie is iconic. And you just don't get better than Halloween. Halloween is a great movie. It's Michael Myers. It's the first one. And I love gore. I love nudity. I love all these things. But, you know, Halloween, again, is almost like you said with Black Christmas. It's in a lot of ways everything that a lot of people who consider themselves the slasher formula and know the slasher formula and fans, it's everything that slasher movies in a lot of ways aren't supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I actually will disagree with you when you said Black Christmas is the closest to a giallo. Mm-hmm. I actually think the stalking sequences in Halloween are kind of close, the closest that I've seen. I actually think the stalking sequences in Halloween are better than those in Black Christmas.
What I would say about that is I think that they differ from giallos in Halloween. I think that in Black Christmas, they were taken directly from giallo films. I think that's what he was looking at the time when he did that. In Halloween, though, I think it's a lot less giallo and more Hitchcock. It's more about the moving shadows, man, and what you don't see. And, you know, I think one of the scenes in Halloween that always gets me the most is the scene where Jamie Lee Curtis first gets home from school. And she's on the phone, and she sees Michael Myers standing out back, and then they do the thing where she looks away, and he looks again, and he's gone.
Yeah.
There's just something about the original Halloween that is really creepy with that, man. It's like, you know, I'm sure you guys have heard Wes Craven talk about this before when he talks about Last House on the Left. He would say, like, with the violence, and the reason why they amped it up is because they wanted you to think that you're in dangerous hands with the director, where you never know where he's going to show you, or you never know the lengths that he's going to go to. I look at the original Halloween like that, but not with gore. You never know in that movie when the killer's going to strike. There's times where the killer shows up and he's there and he's not killing anybody. It's a mind game to Michael Myers. It's all a game to him. And that's what I think is truly the thing that sets this movie apart, is just the whole intent behind the character. And it's a disturbed individual. And then the thing that's so brilliant about this movie to me is it was the first slasher film where the fucking killer lives at the end. And it's not like Howlin' Black Christmas, where he wasn't caught and they didn't know who he was. This movie, they found him, they caught him, they tried to kill him, it didn't work. And at the end, when the music plays and he's not there, it's like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck was that? And you leave the movie, the theater, whatever you want to call it, not knowing.
Exactly.
And that's the best part about it. It's brilliant. It's a genius move by John Carpenter.
Yep. So, Steve.
I mean, what can you say? I mean, it's when I saw this when I was about 10, I was on television, and it scared the crap out of me. I mean, there's so many scenes in here that are so much, you know, that are, you know, iconic. So to me, one of the scariest scenes is when she believes she stabbed him with the coat hanger, and she's by the door of the room, and then he slowly comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, stuff like that. I mean, the look of the film is so rich. The colors are so rich. I mean, it's just, you know, the music fits everything. I don't know how you could make a better movie than Halloween.
Yeah, and isn't that? I mean, I don't know that we could say anything better than that. I mean, even my favorite movies, there's a handful of movies that basically that I can say what you just said, which I don't see how you could ever have made it any better than it was. I mean, even movies that I love, that I really enjoy, you can be like, well, it probably could have done this better, probably could have done better. But like something like, you know, Halloween, there's really, I mean, I can't think of anything that Carpenter could have done better, because truthfully, I don't know, a lot of people say, well, I wish there were more gore in it. Well, dude, you know, that probably would distract from the whole point of the movie. Because, like Ed said, you don't know where the killer's coming from. There's no build-up to it. And they're not going to show you the kill. You just know these people that you've been watching are dead. And they're just they don't linger on it. They don't focus on it. You just know bad things have happened.
Yeah. And it, you know what? The thing, too, with the original Halloween, man, is, like, with the music and the way everything's set up for you and the way it sends you, you know, it's kind of like before Halloween, okay, and you know, some other films like Night of the Living Dead and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Horror films were basically monsters and vampires and stuff like that, which is fine. But let's give Halloween the credit that it deserves. It was one of the first films that said, how can we take that monster and bring him to your neighborhood? And how can we make it so that he's not this creepy, goofy monster that they give him the mask and the jumpsuit to where he's almost generic? And it's like, it's a costume. You don't know what's coming after you. And that's why I love how they use the boogeyman reference in the film, because that's what the boogeyman is. I mean, if you're a little kid and you remember having dreams about the boogeyman, try and think of what he looks like. He has no face. He's big. He's dark. He's brooding. And he's trying to get you. And that's exactly what Halloween is. They took the boogeyman out of the dreams and put him into a movie. And it works on so many levels. I mean, the acting in the film is good. The violence in the film's well done. It's well shot. The camera, like the angles and the movement on the camera, especially during the whole first sequence in the film with young Michael Myers, that is shot so damn slick and so well, man, that it just, the movie is a technical masterpiece. It's written well. It's acted well. It's like the stars were all aligned on this one because it's pretty much a perfect horror film.
I agree. And, you know, the funny thing is, and this is, remember when I said Halloween 2 almost made my list, but I just couldn't have two from the same franchise on the list?
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't want to do that. I agree with everything you just said, and this is how much respect I have for Halloween 2. I almost put Halloween 2 on the list and pulled Halloween off.
There you go.
Because I think Halloween 2, I love Halloween. And in the end, I just couldn't do it because it's too good. But I would say much of the same thing you just said about Halloween 2. It's very creepy, but it also then ramped up the gore and nudity, which I was kind of playing back and forth. You know, do I judge them upon the formula of slasher movie? Do I judge them as for what I think is a better movie, but it's a slasher film. So, yeah, I there were a couple of versions of my list where I had Halloween 2 on at the expense of Halloween. In the end, I couldn't do it, but I got close to it. So
there you go.
So, and that probably made Steve's head pop a little bit. But, you know.
A little bit.
Well, Steve, hey, what's your number 2, buddy?
Well, I don't think great minds think alike. It was Halloween.
Excellent.
I mean, to me, this the story of it. I mean, you know, really, you can explain the entire story within maybe two sentences.
Yeah, it's very simple.
I know, and I mean, to me, the more layers we put on, you know, depending on the movie and you know what, you know how, you know what it is. But this is such a basic story, and then you know, the way he directed it, and you know, all the things that fell into place. You know, that's just the way. It's just a great movie.
And you're a fan of Giallos, aren't you, though, dude?
Okay, I get your point.
So, I mean, you're kind of like, the simpler the better, but then, I mean, I know you love Giallos, and Giallos are like friggin' storylines that are going nowhere, just there to screw with your mind, just pile the crap. It's like, let's pile a bunch of crap in, and at the bottom of it, around the corner on the left-hand side is actually what's going on.
I never said I wasn't a hypocrite.
Well, you know what, though? I think Steve makes a really good point about Halloween, too. The story itself is pretty simple and pretty cut and dry. But the thing is, what makes the story so good in the movie is there are layers added on to the story by great characters. Like, the story is what it is, but then the fact that Dr. Loomis is there and he's trying to stop Michael Myers, like, that's another layer added on just from a character. And then you have the whole, you know, basically all the young women in the neighborhood are getting killed. So that's another one. Then there's the whole layer of like, well, who the fuck is this guy and why is he doing this? And then there's like six other layers going on. And it's not, see, that's what I love about Halloween. It's not a movie that's trying to shove its story down your throat. A lot of movies have these stupid, ridiculously complex plots. And you were like, you know what? If you would have just took out this and this, that movie would have been so much better. And all the characters are generic and lame, and they don't add anything to it. But with Halloween, the story's simple. The characters add so much more to it that it makes it more complex without writing something that's just ridiculously confusing.
You know, the only thing that could have made Halloween better is if all the characters were foul-mouthed hillbilly rednecks.
That's true. And you know what? I was dying to see a young Michael Myers maybe even crying at some point on a curb.
Well,
that would have made it.
Love hurts.
It does. It does. You know? It does.
I didn't know Michael Myers had pets.
I didn't know Michael Myers had a vagina either.
Oh, man. All right. Enough, you know, sooner or later, during a discussion of Halloween, I had to take a shot at Rob Zombie. I'm sorry.
Good for you.
And I'm sure, I mean, there's going to be much discussion, just general discussion later on the show about just slasher stuff in general, and I'm sure that'll come back up. But sorry, I had to. For those who aren't in the know and don't know where we were doing, that was just me taking a shot at Rob Zombie. So,
yes.
But, Ed, what All is right. your number two?
It is not Halloween.
Holy crap.
So, yes, this is a movie that I personally champion all the time. I'm sure I'm going to get some shit for this one, and I don't care. I think it hits every mark that a slasher movie needs to hit. Gore, boobies, great killer, awesome story, great atmosphere, and it's a better made film than the first one in the series that everybody gives a lot of credit to, and that movie is Friday the 13th, Part 2.
I'm not speaking to you ever again.
Fuck you.
Part 2 is better than Part 1?
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. And I'll tell you why it is. I've told you this many times, John. I've always had a problem with a 5-foot-tall woman that's in her probably late 40s to 50s, I guess, in the movie. Completely decimating people like she's the fucking Terminator.
Let me explain something to you, buddy. Let me explain something to you right now.
Sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you married?
No.
All right. Have you lived with a small, angry woman during a certain time of the month?
Oh, yes, I have, actually.
Well, you haven't lived with my wife, because there are times that she could decimate a whole summer camp full of people. If they cranked her off the wrong direction.
You know what? The thing is, I'll just be honest. I think part two. See, this is the thing. Because of the ending and what's going on in the original film, it kind of transcends what a slasher is to me a little bit, because that's not really what it is. It's not, you know, the stalk and slash. I mean, there's some stuff like that in the first one. Don't get me wrong. But the second movie to me, It's the first movie with grown-up adult Jason. He's tater-sacked out and rednecked as fuck. He kills a fucking guy in a wheelchair brutally. And, you know, fuck that guy, because he was about to get laid, so he deserved it. I just think the movie is way slicker. It's actually made a lot better. And I think it's the one Friday the 13th, because at this point Jason didn't have the mask. He wasn't this huge icon. They didn't have to make this character some comic book character. They could make him scary. They could make him, you know, just creepier than shit. Well, and once again, something that I don't think this movie gets enough credit on is the ending. Because I still remember the first time I seen this movie, and just like the first movie, I almost shit my pants at the end. But it's a well-done slasher movie. I think it hits all the conventions, and people disagree with me all the time, but I still think this is the strongest Friday the 13th film ever made to date.
Well, it's okay, dude. You're wrong, but that's okay.
You like Ed, Just Before Dawn, Ed, though, goddamn you.
Ed, can I ask you a question, though?
What's up?
Now that you've very eloquently defended the movie, I just have one question for you.
Sure.
Where the fuck does a tater sack wearing, mutated, horribly disfigured, redneck son of a bitch get bus fare to go into the city and kill the one chick that got away?
No, dude. He didn't get bus fare. He'd never got her bus fare. See, that's the thing. This is the one thing that I think about, and I've thought about this for a long time with this movie. This is how I personally believe that the story went. Nobody's ever told me this. You know, this is why my life is good, because I just make things up in my head and act like they're true. I think that Jason actually existed in the first movie. He maybe even have done some of the kills. They don't always allude to it. I mean, they don't allude to it at all, actually, in the first film. But I think Jason was alive and aware of what was going on, seeing his mom get decapitated. And it was more along the lines of, like, well, Jason could drive a car. You know what I mean? I don't think he's that retarded. I'm pretty sure if you could set up traps for people and do all the shit that he's done, I'm sure driving a car is probably not that hard. But then, you know, what can you do? I mean, I just think that the, you know, besides Jason driving, and I think that in the first movie, it just carries on. And I think that the first scene in the second film is just him existing and followed her home. But they don't say where she lives. So maybe she lived 20 minutes away from Camp Crystal Lake.
I don't know.
Put it this way. If I can suspend belief to think that an older woman is mutilating people violently in the first film, then damn it, you can suspend belief and think that Jason hitchhiked.
Oh, yeah, because it was a pigtail to take Jason up.
Well, you know, this is the thing.
He probably went crazy Ralph's handlebars. That's what it was.
Dude, they live in the backwoods. I'm sure Jason's probably kind of a fashionable-looking guy when it comes to dealing with those people.
Oh. So, I don't know, dude. I mean, Part 2's a good movie. You know, what's the one female lead from that movie, though?
Amy Steele?
Amy Steele.
Oh, yeah.
I've never liked her, and I've never liked that character.
See, really? Because I think she's, like, one of the best final girls in the whole series.
No, I mean, yeah. I'm still a huge fan of Adrian King. I mean, I don't know. And maybe it's because I've now met her, but even before that, dude, I mean, I've always just, I guess it's just me, because I mean, I saw Friday the 13th Part 1 first.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of saw them in order, and I was really, I've always disliked how they got rid of the kid. I mean, if you weren't going to bring her back in the movie, and I understand with things that were going on in her life and stuff, just leave her alone then. She got away, whatever. But I just think that tacking her on and killing her at the beginning of the second film and the way they did caused so many stupid issues with Jason and Tater Sack Jason and a whole nine yards that I almost wish I'd left that alone. So I that movie starts off annoying me. And then I've never liked Amy Steele that much as an actress or that character. And that's a whole lot of pee from a rat, seriously. So it's like, you know what I'm saying?
That's not from the rat, though.
I know. That's from her. The rat scares her.
Yeah. And, I mean, see, this is the only...
Jason has chased you around, slaughtered all your friends.
Yes.
And, oh, my God, I see a rat. I'm going to piss my pants. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, I'm not saying it's perfect.
Go ahead. Killing a dude in a wheelchair, killing a crippled dude in a wheelchair, that was pretty funny.
I mean, the thing that I think rules about the second one is... It's completely out to show you that Jason ain't fucking around. You know what I mean? He goes back and kills the chick that killed his mom. He's knocking off people in wheelchairs. He got fucking some dude, you know, falls into a trap in a tree. It's like Jason's fucking people up left and right in that movie. And he's playing games with people. And, you know, I think the movie does have kind of a unique sense of humor too about it, which is really cool. Like where there's a scene where they're talking about the girl's dog and they think they found the dog. And then they show the next scene. It's a close up of them grilling a hot dog.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I love stuff like that. I mean, I think that the movie does have a sense of humor to it, but it's a subtle one. And I just think it's one of the more enjoyable ones in the whole series, and it's one of my favorite slashers of all time.
If I were to say the best sequel in that series,
mm-hmm.
I think by far for me to be Part 6. But we'll talk about that more later, because that's actually one of the questions I have.
Okay,
so we'll talk about that more that later. I think that was everybody's number 2, right? Or did I mention my number? Yeah, I mentioned my number 2, so we're good.
Yep.
So, well, you know, we're doing pretty good. Let's take a quick break,
mm-hmm.
and when we come back, we're going to reveal the number 1 slashers from all of our lists.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Yay!
So, we'll be back right after this on the Gut Munchers podcast.
Hello? Is anyone out there? This is Brother D. Is anyone else alive? You know, you'd think with all the zombie movies I watch and review for Mail Order Zombie over at www.mailorderzombie.com, I would have been better prepared for the zombie uprising. I mean, every week I'd watch anywhere from 1 to 3 zombie movies, and my wife, Miss Bren, would join me in every episode to go over listener mail and even occasionally join me in a review of a zombie movie herself. But now, we woke up one morning and the zombies have taken over. And Miss Bren went scouting for supplies, but she's been gone a long time. So I went out to look for her, and now I just wish I'd stay home and watched more zombie movies for everyone, weeding out the good ones from the bad. What? Wait a minute. Who's there? Miss Bren? You're not Miss Bren. Oh no.
Send more podcasters.
The basketball team is planning a party. A slumber party to bare their souls.
I think your tits are getting bigger.
Mine?
All the girls are coming. Except Mary and Linda. And they won't be missed. The party begins at 8 o'clock. It's a slumber party for old time's sake.
Love it too. Do you think I'm getting better?
But be on the lookout for an uninvited guest.
Please.
When the pizza arrives, things really start jumping. Some people may have to leave early. But others will hang around and hang around.
Here, Courtney, you're underage. Negative. Come on, let's go.
You're not going to eat the dead guy's pizza.
I feel better already. Really, I do.
But for those who stay, there'll be plenty of surprises. And non-stop action. For sure, no one's getting any sleep the night of the Slumber Party Massacre. Close your eyes for a second and sleep forever.
He's real.
Lore of the campfire, telling of his horror, lost in the woods with the man.
Well, we're back. We're going to hit our number one selections from all of our lists. So I guess there's no reason to keep chatting. Without further ado, let's start with Ed. What's your number one, Ed?
Number one is a film that we already talked about. I think it's perfect in just about every way. It's one of my favorite horror films, not just slashers of all time, and I think it's easily the best slasher. And it is John Carpenter's Halloween.
See, that makes more sense because I know we hadn't talked about Ernest Scared Stupid yet.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, dude, but, I mean,
what can you not say? I mean, we've already talked about the movie, but I mean, it's just brilliant from beginning to end. I think it hits everywhere it needs to be. And the fact that you said it too when we were talking about it, how it's different, like it doesn't really follow the conventions of the slasher film. Mm-hmm. See, I think that's why I put this one at number one. It doesn't follow the conventions of the slasher film. The conventions of the slasher film follow it.
And, you know, that's the funny thing is, Halloween obviously was my number two. And the reason it was number two and not number one, because my top two films are both incredibly great movies, is the fact that it didn't follow the formula. So I gave the other movie just a little bit more props for, like, creating the formula that most of the other slashers followed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're equally good films. And man, you can't argue with Halloween being the number one slasher film.
Yep.
Anybody that really would want to like make an argument that say you're crazy for putting it there, that, to me, and I'm not trying to be arrogant or obnoxious, they don't have a clue what they're talking about.
Yeah, I would agree.
They might not agree with you, but to tell somebody you're nuts for putting it number one is just stupid.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure that, I mean, you guys didn't pick it to be your number one, and I highly doubt I'm going to argue too heavily against your number one picks.
Yeah, well,
so it's, it all works the same way. What'd you say?
Mine should be pretty obvious at this point. Well, my number one.
Oh, I know what yours is. I knew what yours was coming into this, but I wasn't sure, but I thought I knew.
Yeah. Yeah, Halloween's a great film. Can't argue with that. So I'll go ahead and let Steve pick his number one.
Okay, well, you know, this one started a big, long series, and even though it was inspired by, I'm sure, of Halloween success, Friday the 13th, to me, it's just, it's almost a blueprint for the slashers that came immediately after in the 80s.
Yeah, and you know, just to let you know, that's mine, too. My number one slasher film was Friday the 13th.
Ooh.
And yeah, definitely, dude. I agree with you 110%. It did set the blueprint. It did set, you know, the basics. And even the silly stuff, like get naked, have premarital sex, smoke pot, go off, get killed. I mean, mm-hmm. And that might seem like, and that's not me even saying, I don't know, dude. You see, a lot of people get upset, and I'm just going to speak a little philosophically about this for a moment. When a lot of people look at me and go, well, then that's not a very good movie, right? If you know what's going to happen, it's like, no, you don't get it. It's comfortable, man. It's the rules. And when you sit down and watch a slasher movie, you know what's going to happen. You know people are going to probably – you're going to see some nudity. Mm-hmm. You know people are going to probably do some illegal drugs or drink. And you know the slasher's going to come along and pick them off. And they're probably going to be having premarital sex. And they're doing things that are going to – you know, these are like the rules of a slasher film.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I actually always – I enjoy that because when I sit down, I get that – when I watch a slasher movie for the first time, and I've been finding some I hadn't seen before, I've got that internal checklist. I'm like, oh, here we go. Click. Got that one. And, man, if you do them well, they're a lot of fun. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely the truth. I mean, these movies as a whole are supposed to be pretty fun movies. And, I mean, the funny thing is, too, when you look at all of our top five lists, okay, you might take away a couple movies that you haven't been familiar with forever. You know what I mean? I know Steve mentioned, like, pieces he hadn't seen until a few years back and stuff like that. But let's be honest. When you take our collective lists and put them together, how many of those movies are not only movies that you've seen and like, but they're movies that you continue to go back and rewatch? Even though you know every scene, every line, everything, they're just great to put in and just kind of have on in the background, and they're just really fun movies to consistently rewatch.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I know when I have friends over, because I have a lot of friends who are novice horror fans or haven't seen a lot of these movies,
mm-hmm.
And I love showing them films like The Burning, even though it's not, I don't love it as much as some people do, but The Burning is something I show them a lot because mm-hmm. of the Cropsey scene and the raft. Sleepaway Camp, like I said, I show that to my friends, and it's funny. If you haven't noticed by the explicit tag on your iTunes, we say not words, but we refer,
yes.
It's funny, my friends and I have a different title. We have an alternate title for Sleepaway Camp. And it's funny when there's new people around because they'll be like, hey, have you shown him the She-Cock movie yet? and I'm like, no, I haven't shown him She-Cock. And they're thinking we're talking some god-awful, She-Cock, some god-awful pornographic film. And no, we're just talking about Sleepaway Camp. Because it was funny, my one friend Bubbles was sitting there watching the movie, and he gets to the end, and he just stood up, pointed at the television and screamed She-Cock, so that he got that name. But it got a reaction out of him. I mean, he I showed him a movie 3 years ago. He still talks about it. So, these are movies you go back to.
I had to make a factual correction here for you, being the grindhouse novice that I am, mm-hmm. or actually, you know, genius that I am, because I'm a genius when it comes to grindhouse stuff. She-Cock was actually a film that used to play on a double feature with Sleepaway Camp several years on 42nd Street. So for those who didn't know it, yeah, it's She-Cock. But that's
I'm disturbed about that John has a male friend named Bubbles.
Yeah, I didn't. You know what? The only reason I knew that was a friend of his. Otherwise, I would have thought John went to jail recently, and his friend Bubbles wanted to watch the Sheetcock movie.
My friend Bubbles is he's got two names. His nickname is Bubbles because he's got this like evil clown laugh that he giggles. He's also weighs about 350 pounds, 400 pounds, big guy. Round, but he's got this long hair and beard, and he looks like Jesus. So his other nickname is Fat Jesus.
Yeah, just, Fat Jesus.
Yeah, it's either Fat Jesus or Bubbles, but that's just a little. See,
and I'm fine with all of this, just as long as when you're hanging out with him, one of your favorite activities is not blowing bubbles.
No.
Sorry, I couldn't resist the bad joke there.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
That's all right. I already got you guys with spooning jokes, so I was the one who brought up the gay jokes first. But, yeah, dude, you know, I guess the one thing I would say about Friday the 13th, and the reason I like Friday the the reason I think Friday the 13th is far superior to the second one, and it's just my opinion and my personal feelings, is I love the fact that there is a real twist ending when people have seen it the first time. They don't really know what's coming or what's happening. And you don't really know who the killer is.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that it's his mom. And, you know, yeah, Betsy Palmer's a small, frail woman. But then, you know, I watch a lot of giallos. And, dude, you know, there's a lot of killers in giallo films that you're just kind of like, if you think about it, don't make a lot of sense.
Oh, I completely agree with you. But if we're hashing out a top five, I think that's when that would really come into play, though.
Yeah. But I do dig it. I do dig the flip around. And then for me, what really puts this movie so far ahead, and I know whether anyone will ever admit it, to seeing the Bava film, Twitch of the Nerve.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the kills are very similar to the kills in Twitch of the Death Nerve. But at the same time, the one kill that I never forget and I always loved, and in the uncut version, like you say, just a few seconds more, but it makes it even all the better, is that arrow from the bottom of the bunk through his throat.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, I also, looking at this movie, I think they put a lot of thought into the kills, because every kill that happens in that movie could have been done by her.
And, dude, I will say this about the kills being well thought out. It's the same thing that I said earlier about the burning being such recognized. It's Tom Savini.
Oh, yeah.
The thing is, I would guarantee you this, and I would say this on almost everything. And you know how much I'm a big fan of George Romero or what have you. Every single movie that Savini does the effects for, the kills are always well thought out. And you know what? 9 times out of 10, it probably has nothing at all to do with the director. That's why Tom Savini was hired, to have inventive kills. And he does it in everything. And that's the reason why Tom Savini's a legend, let's be honest. I mean, that's what he does.
And even if you listen to any commentaries in the Romero films, Romero actually, I mean, when they talk to Romero about what's going on with the movies, as far as the kills and the zombies and stuff, he basically says, Tom comes to me and says, I can kill somebody like this. Or George will say, hey, can you kill somebody like this? And then let Savini do his thing. And that's why I think a lot of Savini's work personally suffered later on in the 80s when people, I think, personally, and this is just me, and I could be wrong, and of course, I'll probably never get to interview a director again if they ever hear me say this. I think directors are insecure. I think one of the things that happened to Savini was people didn't want to be overshadowed. You know, I'm sure, was it Joseph Vito from The Prowler probably gets pissed off that only when it's talk about his movie he's very proud of is Savini's effects. I think it's Joseph Vito who did The Prowler.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's stupid because it's like, yeah, he made a shitty movie, but the effects are killer. And you just let Savini do his job. You hire somebody and let him do it.
You know what? I think one of the things, too, that hurt Savini in his career was actually the fact that he was a little too nice. And what I mean is, Savini, you know, basically everything through the history of horror movies goes in waves. Like, all the major effects people went in waves. You know what I mean? You have guys like Dick Smith and Rick Baker and stuff like that. But then when Savini came, he was the only guy that kind of did his thing, okay?
Yeah.
And he did it for so long, and he was definitely the master at what he did, his gags and everything like that. But then Savini actually taught people how to do his stuff, just like Dick Smith and the other guys did.
Yeah.
But the thing is, though, people that learn stuff from Dick Smith and Rick Baker didn't become better at doing it than Rick Smith or Dick Baker. And that's what happened with Savini. When he was teaching guys like Nicotero and stuff like that, they eventually got better than him. And that was a little unfortunate, and Savini wanted to do other stuff like direct and act, so that might have had something to do with it too. But, I mean, his students passed him up, and that it's kind of unfortunate, but that's what happened.
Yeah. So, let's top our list. Let me do a quick countdown of the list, okay? Or I'll actually, you know what we'll do? Let's let each person do their list. So, Steve.
Yes.
Give us a recount of your list, starting at the bottom.
At number 5 was Slipaway Camp. Number 4 was Pieces. Number 3 was The Burning. Number 2 was Halloween. And number 1 was the original Friday the 13th.
And Ed?
My number 5 was My Bloody Valentine. Number 4, Halloween Part 2. Number 3, Black Christmas. Number 2, Friday the 13th Part 2. And number 1, John Carpenter's Halloween.
My top 5 is number 5, Sleepaway Camp. Number 4, Just Before Dawn. Number 3, My Bloody Valentine. Number 2, Carpenter's Halloween. And number 1, the original Friday the 13th. Now, we've all just recounted our lists, or recapped our lists. And I have one, and we're gonna have some more questions after a break. But before we go to break, there's one question I have to ask. And I thought this might be the case, and I know why it's not on mine. But there's one glaring absent, or there's one glaring movie absent from all three of our lists. 1974's The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
It's not a slasher film, in my opinion.
Was that you too, Steve?
Yeah, I don't consider that a slasher.
Why not?
I don't know. It just seems. I mean, the grindhouse part of it kind of gets me and. I just don't know. I mean, to me, it's not. It doesn't have the rules. It's not following any rules.
There's so, no stock and slash in it. None.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't disagree with you guys, and I wasn't trying to put anybody on the spot. But for me, I have the same exact opinion that you guys do on this. Which is, I don't ever consider it a slasher film, even though a lot of people, if you look at a lot of slasher, because when I was doing research, a lot of slasher lists had this on their list, and I never considered it a slasher film, and I was thinking about it myself, and I was kind of like, again, I'm right with Steve, I consider it an exploitation movie, I consider it kind of its own thing, it's special, it's the family, so there's not one single killer. It's them picking off people that come that have the misfortune of stumbling across that group. And
you know what? I mean, honestly, though, I really do not understand why somebody would consider that a slasher film. I mean, because then under that pretense, if that's a slasher film, wouldn't something like The Hills Have Eyes be a slasher film too?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah. But I thought it was interesting because I know I did see that on a lot of people's lists. And I actually saw The Hills Have Eyes on people's lists. But then, you know, if you start making those exceptions, then you could almost say something like Last House on the Left could be a slasher film. And for me, the rules that I went by was a single killer.
Except for Just Before Dawn.
Yeah, except for Just Before Dawn, right. Yeah. Even though, well, it's just the two brothers, and they give the impression there's a single killer.
Yeah, I'm just giving you a hard time about them.
But then people being put, you know, going somewhere isolated or like in the woods camping. And then the big one was there had to be some stalking and people got picked off one at a time like that. And I just, you know, for me, I don't know, it just Texas Chainsaw just didn't fit because there was the whole family, because there wasn't any stalking and killing. I don't know,
out of this whole thing there, I thought there was actually two glaring examples from everybody's list. I didn't even think of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but there are two movies that I was very curious to see if anybody was going to place them. And those movies are, Maniac and Psycho.
Psycho is not a slasher film to me. Psycho is. I'll tell you, I didn't put either one on there because not to be a creep, because I love slasher movies and these are great movies, I have too much respect for Psycho and as a film, and I have too much respect for what they were doing with Maniac as a film. I don't think Maniac is as good as Psycho, but I think both of those movies, to me, are more, especially Maniac, are more character studies of a disturbed individual.
See, that's the way I look at them, too. I completely agree. Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, I love Friday the 13th. I love My Bloody Valentine. I love these. I love Halloween. But you could take the visual of, like, you could lift Michael Myers up and put him in a Friday the 13th movie and have it Michael Myers, and then put Jason in a Halloween movie. Just the look, I'm not saying the background, but the look of the character, and it would kind of work. They're kind of faceless. They're kind of there.
Yeah.
You know, Anthony Perkins is that character. Not Anthony Perkins. Anthony Perkins.
Yeah.
Yeah, Anthony Perkins. And then in the case of
Joe Spinell.
Joe Spinell. Dude, Joe Spinell is brilliant in Maniac. I didn't like Maniac the first time I watched it, and the second time I watched it, I loved it. And it's because I really got into Spinell and what he was doing with the character. So yeah, those aren't slasher films. Those are something else, man. Those are psychological films. It'd be like, I mean, if you considered those slasher films, you could almost pull Henry Portrait of Henry out and stick it. And I haven't watched it yet, but I know that that's not the kind of movie it is. It's about the character study of the killer and what's going through his mind. I mean, and in spite, and of course, let's be honest. If you try to figure out what's going on in Michael Myers' mind, for example, and you try to make that a big deal of your movie, what's going on, what his motivations are, guess what happened? You get a piece of shit movie.
Yep.
That was another shot of Rob Zombie. So
that's right.
But
luckily.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah, dude, it's just, I don't know. Yeah. Those are interesting. Interesting. And, you know, actually, the funny thing is, the one movie that would totally fit on this list, that no one put on the list, there's no damn Freddy Krueger.
See, to me, that's a little bit far outside of the slasher genre.
See, I hate, because I hate the Nightmare on Elm Street movie, so I'm good with it, but
it's, I think a lot, you know, I do like some of the movies. I'm not as big on the series as a lot of people are, but I think the whole dream factor and everything really, it takes it out of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, I mean, there are movies like, for example, Bad Dreams is a movie that is more of a slasher film than a Nightmare on Elm Street. And it's a ripoff of a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's real iffy, but it's definitely, I just don't consider the Nightmare on Elm Street series to be simply slasher movies. They might have some of the conventions just like Maniac or Psycho would, but there's too much other stuff going on that makes it fall outside of the slasher genre to me.
What about you, Steve? Same kind of idea or what?
Yeah, I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street, definitely not a slasher. It's just, it's got like a supernatural element to it, so I mean, right, to me, that kind of kicks it out of that that title of a slasher.
Yeah,
absolutely.
See, for me, the slasher characters, and again, we'll get more into this later on. But for me, a slasher should be not necessarily, doesn't have to be faceless, but sort of more animalistic. I mean, I don't want to. Freddy Krueger in the first Nightmare on Elm Street was kind of scary. But then, like, in the second one, they started downhill, and it was wisecracking. And Robert Englund's a great actor. Don't get me wrong. Great guy. Great actor. But I just never got into the whole wisecracking thing. I never found it scary. I never found it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jason kind of ended up being a joke because of how absurd some of the movies got. Okay. But he was never cracking jokes, and there's a difference.
Well, let's be honest, too. I mean, when it comes to, you know, perfect example, I think, is like Friday the 13th, 6. Where the movie clearly has a sense of humor about itself. But the sense of humor in that movie is more to do with imagery and kind of like little jokes and cracks added in. When Nightmare on Elm Street, you're basically, it's like a stand-up comedian. It's like, if Freddy's lines aren't working for you, it's not funny.
Yeah.
And that's the difference to me. I find Friday the 13th humorous. And the Nightmare on Elm Street stuff, I just find myself kind of rolling my eyes. The jokes don't hold up compared to Friday the 13th, I think.
Well, you know, before we go, let's do one thing. Let's go ahead and just do very briefly, and I'll start off with it. Honorable mentions, things that almost made this list that didn't quite. And the ones that I had written down that were close to making the list, my honorable mentions, these are all movies that I thought, basically, I had the the top three were locked for me. Friday the 13th, Halloween, My Bloody Valentine, in that order. They were locked. And then the movies that could have filled slot four and slot five were Halloween 2. It's a great movie. Black Christmas could have hit those. I mean, again, for me, it was the first one to get bumped off because I thought it was a little slow, so I kind of picked at it that way. Madman. I very easily could have put Madman on this list.
Absolutely.
But for me, you know, it didn't quite have enough going for it, but it could have easily made the list. The other one that this was the hardest one for me to leave off the list. And again, it got left off the list because I didn't want to put two franchise movies from the same franchise. And it's what you just mentioned, Friday the 13th, Part 6. That movie has some humor. It's very funny. It breaks that third wall where a couple times a character looks right at the audience. Like when I don't know if you guys have seen the movie recently, but when the caretaker is like having to sees the exposed grave. Mm-hmm. And he looks right up and looks right at the audience and says, I can't remember exactly, but something along the lines of some people have a strange idea of entertainment, looking right at the audience, looking right at you and being like, got you guys. What the hell are you watching?
You know what I love about that character to me? The fact that movie's kind of like a universal, Jason movie, you know? And the fact that the director seems to be extremely knowledgeable about horror and its roots and everything. Mm-hmm. I'm just real surprised with that movie that, you know, like The Caretaker. That's a character to me that's completely based off Dick Miller.
Yeah.
Completely. Okay. I mean, it's shocking to me that they didn't even try and get Dick Miller to do the role.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the other thing is that this embraces that slasher movie formula better than any of the other movies in the Friday the 13th series included. It's like you're going to go off, you're going to have sex, you're going to do drugs, you're going to get killed.
Pretty much.
It just embraces it and goes for it and says you're watching a horror film. This is about having fun and you're going to have fun. Friday the 13th Part 6 and really, the two that I had a hard time leaving off the list was Friday the 13th, Part 6, and Madman. Those movies, along with Just Before Dawn and Sleepaway Camp, I had that kind of pull there for those last two spots. So those are my honorable mentions. Cool. Which one of you guys wants to go next?
Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, okay. Well, My Bloody Valentine would be one. Madman, of course. And I just recently rewatched a sorority. I think it was Sorority House Massacre or Slumber Party Massacre. I can't remember which one, but
big phallic drill.
Yeah, that was Slumber Party, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that was a decent one. And then Friday the 13th Part 4 to me is the atypical Friday the 13th movie. You know. I don't know what it is, but when I can think of Friday the 13th, I think of Part 4.
Yeah.
It's a good choice. I like that one a lot, actually.
It's a good movie. I mean, you know, and that's funny because one of the questions we're going to ask after the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the franchises and what we think some of the best sequels in the franchises are and some of the worst. But, yeah, definitely Part 4, it's a strong entry into the Friday the 13th series franchise for sure. So.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ed, what are your honorable mentions?
The ones that I had were like you guys. I had Friday the 13th Part 5 and Part 6 were really hard for me to keep off the list because I'm a big fan of both of those. The Burning, which I mentioned earlier, and Pieces, obviously, which I mentioned earlier. But the other ones, there's three other ones that come to mind. Madman, you guys both mentioned. Another one, obviously, was both your guys' number one was Friday the 13th. And another one that nobody has mentioned yet that I think is so underrated, and it's criminal to me that this movie is not available yet on DVD. It's called Nightmares and a Damaged Brain, or Nightmare. It has an alternate title. But I just think this movie is incredibly sleazy. It's incredibly different. It's cool. The killer is menacing and creepier than shit. There's a child murderer at a point in the movie, and the gore is really, really good, and it's just it's a highly underrated slasher film in my opinion. So that one actually it wouldn't have cracked the top five, but it was really close.
I'm sure Code Red will get that out quickly too.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe they'll come out with it in 5 years or just put it out bare bones because the guy who runs their company is a fucking whiny asshole.
And you know how people, the shows always do that? The opinions contained within aren't necessarily blah, blah. Guess what? That is the opinion of GutMunchers.com. The guy that runs Code Red is a whiny asshole. So
and you know what? It's the – put it this way. There's recently an article online about this, which I don't recall where it was offhand. But the guy basically had the same opinion of us. And it was a little refreshing, too, because a lot of people feel this way about the guy. So it was nice to read that.
Yeah, well, it is what it is. So
it ill what it ill.
Yep. What we're going to do is we are going to take a short break, and we are going to come back. And when we do, we're going to talk just a few – well, we're going to have a few questions. And we'll just do some general talk about slasher movies. What do you guys think of that?
Sounds good.
Stupendous, even.
All right. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have some more talk. So you're listening to the Gut Munchers podcast.
Friday the 13th, 1981, be any different? Friday the 13th, part 2. The body count continues. Friday the 13th, part 2.
Daddy gone away, Harry Warden made you pay.
Once upon a time, on a sad valentine, in a place known as Annie Girl Mine, a legend began, every woman and man would always remember the time.
And those. And we're back. Well, this is the final segment of the show. This is going to be just a real relaxed kind of chat, conversation. I think we all prepared some questions, and we're just going to talk some slashers, basically slasher movies, and some questions about slasher movies. So, I am going to, well, this should be a good one. I'm going to start off the questions here, just a general question, and I'll ask it, give you guys a chance to answer it, and then I'll give you my answer. Best gore with the weakest plot or pacing, or worst pacing? In other words, the weakest movie, worst paced movie with the best gore possible.
It's a good question. The Prowler.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
You know what's funny? That's the answer I had for that question. Yeah. The Prowler is a great gore, awful movie. Just
it's
awful
a horrible
movie.
Horrible movie.
Yeah. So, Ed, what do you got?
Yeah, I got a question that kind of coincides with that one. Regardless of the best movie or what have you, which movie do you guys think, out of all the slasher films that you've ever seen, has the best gore?
Wow.
I have stumped the experts.
No, I mean, that's tough. Honestly, Friday the 13th, Part 4, maybe.
That's a good call.
Part four.
Because
I think it's the one Savini came back on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That scene at the end of part four where Jason slides down the machete. That's
awesome.
That's pretty badass. That's pretty badass. That I would say, and it's funny because it's another Savini. The three that popped into my head is I love the kills in the Prowler. But I would actually say probably Friday the 13th part four, Friday the 13th part one are the two best gore films, and they're Savini films. With the Prowler and actually The Burning, another Savini film, being honorable mentions. I think there's a theme there. I mean, the early 80s with Savini and slasher movies, the guy just had it. I mean, there was nobody touching him.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, I got a weird one for you, though.
Okay.
Here's another one that's got great gore. The Intruder.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Nicotero, right?
Yep, K&B.
K&B. Yeah, yeah, The Intruder. Again, not a great movie. I could almost put that as an answer to the question I asked, because I don't think it's a great movie, but the gore is there, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
So, sorry, Steve, didn't mean to probably take all the answers.
Yeah, man, you just took them all. For some reason, there's a movie popping in my head, like Bloody Moon, from Jeff Franco.
Oh, yeah.
That was his version of a slasher.
Damn.
So,
underrated. Underrated, let me tell you that.
Holy crap, yeah, Ed. Steve embarrassed us twice. With some great answers.
Hey,
I mean, Cease is on his list, and then Bloody Moon. You're right, Steve. That is actually a pretty good movie.
Yeah, it's the best Jess Franco movie I've ever seen. I mean, the rest of them have got some kind of weird slowness to them, but this one, it just seems like... I guess he wasn't drinking or smoking that much.
I got one for you, though. Here's a Jess Franco movie for you. Ilsa, uh-huh. The Wicked Warden.
Now
that is a Jess Franco movie, my friend.
I haven't watched that one. I'll need to catch up with I've only seen, like, the first Ilsa movie, and I've got the others, but I just haven't watched the others yet.
Okay.
Yeah, good answer, dude. Bloody Moon, good answer.
You know what? Since I pretty much agreed with John, I was going to say Friday the 13th Part 4. I thought that was a great choice, and I really liked Intruder, too. I'm going to bring up two newer films, actually. I don't think these are the best gore ever, but I wanted to bring them up. I think Gianetto De Rossi's effects in High Tension were excellent.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I have issues. I have real big issues with the plot twist in High Tension.
Oh, just gore.
But gore, dude, yeah, that was badass. That is you're watching. I mean, dude, the scene with the dude getting his head he's got his head stuck between the spindles on the staircase.
Yep.
Dude, that's brutal. It's brutal.
And yeah. Another one that I had to bring up. It's brand new. I just watched this one yesterday. I know John's going to get a chance to see it. I don't know if he's watched it yet. And Steve, I don't know. I know you haven't seen this one yet. I'm pretty sure. It's a movie called Laid to Rest.
Is it good?
The movie's okay. It's not great. It's solid. It's a solid slasher.
Mm-hmm.
But man, wait till you guys see some of the fucking kills in this movie. Mm-hmm. This dude is absolutely brutal. I mean, brutal. Like, yeah, just to get that out there. I mean, there are scenes where, like, and I mean, if you've ever seen any of the art or the trailer or anything for the movie, the guy has these two knives with serrated edges on both sides, and they both have, like, finger handles, you know what I mean, on the knives. Holy shit, does he fuck people up in this movie, man. Wait till you guys see it. I'm telling you, I will not say that everybody's going to love the movie as a slasher film, even though I think it's a solid one, but people are going to shit themselves over some of the gore in the movie.
That's good.
Cool.
It looked good. I mean, I know.
It's solid. It's definitely solid. I'll give it that.
Yeah. So, and just in case anybody's wanting to know, that's something that comes out, what is it, April?
April 21st.
April 21st. So there will be, I know there'll be reviews for it on both Blood Type and Gut Munchers. So,
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, Steve.
Yes.
Hit us with a question, buddy.
What is in the slashers? What is the weirdest weapon you've seen being used by a killer?
I got it too. You know what, dude? Hold on, Steve. I bet you I know your answer because I have the same friggin' question, and I bet you the same movie caused us both to ask it.
No, well, you would think that, but actually, no. I know what you're going to say, but no, I got a different one.
Okay. A goddamn javelin.
Yeah, that's what I thought
you were going to say. I just watched this slasher movie called Fatal Games, and there's this guy running around in a tracksuit with a javelin. That is the most awkward and weirdest goddamn weapon I've seen in a slasher movie.
Dude, I have one that might be better.
What's
that? The movie is only somewhat a slasher film, okay? But the killer kills somebody with a goddamn trombone, and it's seriously The Town That Dreaded Sundown.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, shit, I forgot all about that.
That's the weirdest. I mean, I don't know. I know John's seen. Have you ever seen it, Steve?
Oh, I love that movie. I love that movie. I love all his movies.
Yeah, it's a movie that is dead serious. It's an excellent movie, and it's highly underrated. But damn, I'll be goddamned if that scene makes no sense whatsoever.
Right.
At all. I mean, it's so bizarre that will stick in my. I can't believe that movie's not out on DVD simply because of that scene.
Mm-hmm. I think that movie's supposed to come out, though, isn't it?
I hope so. I surely hope so.
Yeah, me too. I would love to meet Charles Pierce at a convention, but the Mine is from a slasher. It's in the early 80s. It was called A Killer Workout or Robicide. and the killer, for several of the kills, used a giant baby pin.
What? Dude, where the hell did you see this?
Hey, the magic of the interwebs.
Oh, my killer God, workout. Dude. I've heard of Killer Workout. I've never seen it, though.
That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous.
It's pretty crazy.
That's out of control.
Dude, I was trying to think of something else came to mind, too, when he said that. Now it just fucking completely escaped me. The really weird-ass slasher movie kill. God damn it.
So, if it comes back to you, just interrupt us.
I will.
Okay, next question. I got a question for you guys.
Okay.
Coolest looking killer. It could be a shitty movie, but coolest looking killer from a slasher movie.
Damn. That's a good question.
What do you got, Steve? Anything? Can you come off the top of your head?
There's one movie called The Edge of the Axe, and it was kind of like a ripoff of the Michael Myers mask. It was just like it was very minimal feature mask, and he was going around slashing people from that. But, I mean, I can't think of anything else.
You know which one I always thought was really cool? Mm. Alice Sweet Alice. With, like, the expressionless, like, clear, like, bank robber kind of mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I think she's scarier with the mask off.
Yeah.
Again, a spoiler. It's just this creepy-ass old lady. But
you know what's a really good one? I'll say this. I absolutely love this. I think it's brilliant. Terror Train.
Oh, yeah. That is a creepy mask.
The guy changes. He's changing costumes.
Yeah.
I love that.
The one mask, though, like the almost Mardi Gras mask that he wears.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one stuck with me. That was freaky. The two that I actually had that I thought were really cool looks were the killers. And one was, and I love Madman. I think Madman Mars looks cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But the other one, and again, you know, dude, they were so close to having a killer movie if they just put a script together, was the killer from The Prowler.
Very true.
The killer in The Prowler looks really kick-ass. Like we already said, the gore is good, so all you had to do was put a fucking story and characters that didn't annoy us, and you'd have had a classic damn friggin' movie, so...
You know, another one I would say, too, I mean, it's pretty obvious, but I think if you're a fan of the series, you'll get what I'm saying. Jason in Friday the 13th 7 with the broken mask and the you could see his spine through his back. And it was like the first time Jason was actually meant to show his damage that he's taken over the past few movies. Yeah. I love that. I think that's a great look.
That was. That was pretty cool. And, you know, actually, you had mentioned this movie before, too. Just from a creepy, just every man, but there's something wrong with this dude, the truck driver from High Tension.
Oh, yeah. That's a good look.
He just looks like, he's got that look on his face like, I'm just going to fucking kill everybody, so whatever.
Yeah, complete madman.
Yeah.
100% there.
So.
Well, I think I have another question for you guys. What's the worst slasher movie of all time?
Well, there's just so many to pick from. I'll mention two that a lot of people like, and I'm going to piss people off by saying it. But these are two movies that I found absolutely hideously boring. And that would be The Forest. I thought it was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
With all respect to a certain website that really like it, I'm not trying to pick a fight with you, but yeah, no, it's sucky. And then this one's going to really piss him off. I think Don't Go in the Woods Alone is one of the most god-awful waste of time.
Absolutely.
And then there's two that I don't know that a lot of people know about, but if you have an opportunity to watch them, just don't. Hide and Go Shriek is bad. Hide and Go Shriek is painfully bad.
Yeah.
And there's another one that I think is called Night School that I have on VHS. Yeah, Night School. It's really not very good. It's Rachel Ward. It's a little bit better than the other three that I've mentioned, but it's still not worth your time. So those are the four topped into my head.
What about you, Steve?
Yeah, he got it with Hide and Go Shriek. That was one. And damn, what was the other one I was thinking of? Crap.
Hey, while Steve's thinking, I got one more for you.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Have you guys ever seen a movie called The Prey?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I haven't.
That's awful.
Yeah. Oh.
Dude, The Prey?
I just remember seeing it when I was a kid, and I thought it was great. But, you know, I've watched it recently, and I have to agree, it didn't live up to the memory.
The thing for me is like, it's so much animal footage. It's so poorly paced. And then you get to the end, and it's like this gypsy kid that was horribly disfigured and burned, and apparently they could only afford a mask and things for his hands, so he's dressed in a black turtleneck sweater, black jeans, and black shoes. And I'm just like, the guy's lived in an isolated part of the woods his entire life, and he's a complete fucking animal. Where do you get the nice clothes?
Yeah, I was thinking, I guess The Forest, I'd have to agree with The Forest, I really don't care for that one a lot. I did like Don't Go Alone and Don't Build Whatever in the Woods. Oh. Something.
Really? Do you want to copy the DVD? I'll trade it to you.
No, I've already got one. Thanks. Oh. But,
you don't want an extra one for your collection since you love it so much?
No, it's not that great. No.
John, could you do me a favor? Actually, I will trade you for something because I want to take a big old steaming shit on that movie and light it on fire at Wasteland in front of everybody. So that's fun. Yeah, that's probably mine. Don't Go in the Woods Alone, I think, is a total piece of shit. I hate that movie. I don't think there's anything redeeming about it at all. I don't think it's funny. I don't think it's made by anybody that's remotely competent at all. Definitely Hide and Go Shriek, I agree. That movie's terrible.
Yeah, thanks, Timmy.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Yeah, Tim Gross loves that movie.
Yeah, no.
Tim Gross sold me the VHS of that friggin' movie.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's great.
And the only reason you got it is because I gave it to Tim, because I had the VHS first, watched it and hated it. I was like, here, Tim, you can have it. You like it. But yeah, dude, there's some really bad fucking slasher movies out there. I mean, especially, too, I know you guys were thinking along the lines of, like, older stuff, too. But, man, you get into the newer shit, and it's like, man, there's some – you know what? I'm not going to say it's the worst one of all time, but you know what slasher movie fucking I hate and it pisses me off is Hatchet.
Return to Sleepaway – oh, I remember the one I was going to think of. It was a recent one, too, is that Return to Sleepaway Camp. That
was
just horrible.
That movie sucks. I wouldn't say that's Hatchet. Horrible. I wouldn't put Hatchet on the level the movies we're talking about. But, yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
I just hate it. I just think it's literally like, remember when we were talking about – you know what? This would be a good idea, too, earlier when we were talking about slashers that had, like, the cool killer and decent gore, but it's just a fucked-ass movie.
Yeah.
That's Hatchet. I think Hatchet's exactly that.
I don't even give them credibility for the look of the killer in Hatchet because it's Madman Mars. I mean, they totally ripped that off. I'm sorry.
With Kane Hodder playing him.
But I mean, and Kane Hodder's a cool dude. He's a very cool dude, and I wanted that movie to be good.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, dude, I don't even give him the credit for Madman Mars. I mean, they just lifted the look of that character, really. And it's my opinion. You might disagree with me, but yeah, dude, I don't know.
I have a new movie.
It's a slasher movie, a remake that's a piece of shit that does actually fit on the list with Hide and Go Shriek and these other ones. How about the April Fool's Day remake?
You know what else, too? There's two other remakes you can throw on the same list, and it's Prom Night and Black Christmas.
Yeah.
Because they're all horrible. They're horrible pieces of shit. I mean, they're like, the thing is with Don't Go in the Woods, I think, is a bad movie because the people who made it didn't know what the fuck they were doing.
Yeah.
And these movies are just bad because there's no soul to them. The people who made them know how to make movies. They're pieces of shit.
I disagree with you. In the case of the Butcher Brothers, I think they're hacks.
Well, yeah, you might have that, I guess.
I mean, a lot of people like the Hamiltons, and I thought that was a piece of shit. And I've yet to see the Butcher Brothers make anything that was worth a damn. So,
yeah, and
don't be looking for a Butcher Brothers interview anytime soon.
And another slasher movie too that I absolutely hated, and I remember really being, you know, excited about this one. It came out on DVD in the early, you know, the early part of the decade. Was a movie called Malevolence.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, you talk about a movie that's ripping off other movies left and right. I mean, this movie doesn't have original idea in the whole fucking running time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just dreadful. I can't even tell you half the shit about the movie because I've watched it twice and I'll never watch it again. It's horrible. Horrible, horrible movie.
Damn. So, what else you got, Steve? Anything?
Yeah. You know, when the killer is revealed, which ones do you think are the worst killers after they've been revealed?
So, which is the worst twist ending with the revealing the killer?
Yeah, I mean, we can do that as well.
Or which is, I mean, I...
Well, I'm just saying, after the killer's revealed and you find out who it is, or the look of the person, it just...
Okay. Huh. Well, Fatal Games is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Fatal Games ends up being a woman...
Sally Kirkland.
Huh?
Isn't it Sally Kirkland? Because that's what I saw on IMDb. IMDb.
I think so, but it's basically a woman who used to be a man who's killing. Basically, Fatal Games has a setup where you think that they're giving the pump and the kid. It's Fatal Games. You have all these Olympic athletes. It's the one with the javelin, and you have all these Olympic athletes training, and you find out that they're being pumped full of steroids, and there's a couple of them that have like anger issues, and somebody starts killing athletes off. And there's also the subplot where this girl was supposed to be on a swimming team and didn't make it. And so there's all these like subplots going on. And in the end, when they reveal it, it's actually something completely different. And it's one of those terrible reveals where there's like comes out of nowhere and somebody sees the killer leaves a fucking newspaper.
Yes.
In their office that says, "I used to be a man. But now I'm a woman. I had a sex change, but then they won't let me compete as a woman because they said I used to be a man." And it's the woman who's – and then she goes, "You shouldn't have seen that." And then now she grabs a javelin and tries to kill him. So – but yeah, and that's completely out of left field. And that's one where I'm like, what the fuck? That was stupid. Yeah. I don't know if that's what you're looking at, but that was like the worst reveal.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, you set me up that it could have been one of the students flipping out. All this shit made sense. And then – boom, left turn at the end. And I think you're trying to be clever, but it was bad.
Yeah, there's two that come to mind for me immediately. One of them, a lot of people disagree with me on. It's a movie that I remember seeing as a kid, and I've never liked this movie, and it's all because of the ending. I've never liked April Fool's Day. I just don't like the movie. I never have. I never will. I don't like the ending. It's a big old fuck you, ha ha ha. You've been wasting your time for the last hour and a half. And it's a big joke. It's stupid. I just don't like that. And the other one that comes to mind, and it's not so much because it's a revelation or anything. It's just so much because it's like, oh, okay. And it's a movie that just came out recently on DVD, and it's called Strange Behavior.
Yeah.
It's a really bland, stupid, lame-ass slasher movie. It's really stupid and just boring, and the plot's terrible, and the pacing's horrible, and the reveal at the end's like, yeah, I pretty much kind of figured that out, and I didn't really care anyway if that's what it was, you know. But those are two that I remember that I was, like, really underwhelmed by the endings and the reveal.
Yeah, the one I thought of was the killer from Hide and Go Shriek. I mean, he's some kind of faggy, leathery strap guy.
Oh, my God, dude. That is so awesome. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, the killer ends up being the gay boyfriend.
Yeah. The ex-boyfriend of the janitor or something.
That's not even
I mean,
it's boyfriend. Let's be honest. The janitor's an ex-con, and the killer turns out to be his prison bitch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. You're probably right, Steve. That's definitely worse than the two I mentioned. I'll say
Steve,
that.
Steve, you win. Yeah, you win. That's absolutely worse, dude. You win. Yeah. Even the one I talked about. I mean, prison bitch beats transsexual every time. So
you and I'll say Timmy Gross, I don't know what you're thinking, dude, thinking this is a great movie.
Hey, dude, you know Timmy likes some weird shit. That's all I could say. I love Timmy. Timmy's a good guy, but Timmy likes some weird shit.
Yep.
And he'll tell you that too.
Yeah, he's not going to hide behind that. That's not like he doesn't think all this stuff is Oscar caliber. So
anybody that but you know what, anybody that can tell the Chick Love story as well as he does and as often as he does, I can't really say anything about. But is it my turn?
Sure.
Okay. The funniest slasher movie, intended or otherwise. I know a lot of people don't like, you know, comedy in their horror, but there have been some pretty funny slasher movies, and some of them were meant to be and some of them weren't meant to be. So what do you guys think?
Pieces.
Yeah.
Immediately comes to mind. That movie's so goddamn insane. It's not like that movie doesn't make one bit of sense, but it's still like one of the most fun movies to completely keep rewatching.
That would definitely be on the unintended funny movie.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think the hot tub scene from Mad Men is pretty funny.
Oh, shit, dude. That's hilarious. It's hilariously bad. It's like, hey, look, Galen Ross's boob. Did somebody pull the plug? Are they going down the drain? Why do they keep spinning? You know?
Yeah, that was a spinning.
If I was a crazed woodland killing machine, I'd fucking look at that and go, okay, I got to kill everybody here because I have no idea what's going on.
And I have to throw out some love to Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 and the Garbage Day.
Yes.
I think that's hilarious.
Yes.
It's funny you guys didn't mention it, but two movies, and these were meant to be funny, but I think they ended up being a lot funnier than they thought they were going to be, and it's all because of the lead actress, is I actually do think the two Sleepaway Camp sequels, 2 and 3, are really funny.
Yeah.
Sleepaway Camp 4 is a piece of shit. Sleepaway Camp 4 is awful. But Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3 with Pamela Springsteen, those are actually just some of the raps. And then I love – I think it's Sleepaway Camp 3 where they have the kids running around and they're, like, trying to scare each other and they're dressed up like Freddy and Jason and shit?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those are actually pretty funny movies.
And I just like when she kills the dude by giving him a rap – like, she makes a rap song up and then murders somebody. That's just great to me.
And, you know, I don't think those movies would be half as funny as they ended up being without her. She was really brilliant in those. I mean, I know it seems funny to say somebody was brilliant in something, but, I mean, you can be doing a goofy slasher movie, but do it so well that you're really good at it. And I think that's just her. She did well.
Yeah, I'm surprised she doesn't, like, she shies away from the movie so much. I really am. I mean, she has a huge fan base of people out there, and it's like...
You know what, dude? I think it's one of those things that one day she will finally go to a convention and realize that people like us don't consider her acting career a joke, don't consider her a goof, and actually have a lot of respect for what she did, and then you'll see her hit conventions again. I just think it's one of those things, in a lot of cases, you have a lot of people that just, they think... I mean, the industry treated him like a joke, and the industry treated him like, oh, well, you just did a slasher movie. I mean, please, you're like the bottom of the barrel. They don't realize that a lot of us out there really take this stuff, not necessarily seriously, but have a lot of respect.
Yeah, and admiration, too. I mean, that's what it's all about, man. I mean, it's a little unfortunate that she doesn't, but, I mean, they are spot-on performances, man. I give her a lot of credit for those roles, because the funny thing is, too, she didn't take those roles with the intent of being like, well, I'm Bruce Springsteen's sister and cater to me. She actually tried to do something with the roles, so I give her credit there, and it shows in the movie, or both of them, actually.
Ed, do you got a question?
Okay, here's my question. Which director out of all the directors, and obviously we'll leave off the big guys like the Carpenter and Bob Clark and stuff. Mm-hmm. But which director do you guys think really captured the essence of a slasher film and really did probably a better job at it than they should have?
Easy, easy. I don't remember his name. It's killing me. Tom McLaughlin?
Friday 13th, 6?
Yeah. Can't remember his name. I guess
is it Tom McLaughlin?
I think so.
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah. Friday the 13th, Part 6, dude. It's funny. Ran with it. He knew what he wanted to make. I love the interview that he did for the his name was Jason DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy knew what he wanted to make and embraced it and had a good time with it. And personally, it's not the best slasher movie, but if you ever wanted to sit somebody down with one movie and have one movie kind of explain the formula to them. Or if somebody said, I need to watch one movie that explains to me what this whole slasher phenomenon was about, I would put them in front of Friday the 13th, Part 6. I would. I would just say, it's funny. You're going to see the characters. You're going to see the conventions. You're going to see everything in there. You're going to see a couple of not terribly good gore, but that's not his fault. They cut that movie up like they did all of them. But there are some good things that sneak through. The sheriff getting folded over is probably one of the most memorable things I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Part 6, dude. That guy right there, Part 6. So,
about you, Steve?
Well, I like what Danny Steinman did for Part 5. I think that I just like the look of that, and you know, I initially didn't like it, but you know, after rewatching it, you know, you can really it's really a fun movie to watch.
Yeah, he caught way too much shit for that. Oh, it's not Jason. I'm like, God, man.
Yeah.
It is until the last scene, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I don't care what it was. He was doing his own freaking thing. He was trying to do something different with the franchise. It was already on its fifth movie. And compared to some of the shit that we get later, I mean, I know I've heard people say that's their least favorite Friday the 13th movie.
No.
I've heard people say that.
No, and I'm that's like, ridiculous
Jason
to me.
Jason Goes to Hell is better? Oh, yeah. I'm like, what the hell are you smoking?
Yeah, I consider 5 to be better than the majority of the golden era ones.
I wouldn't go that far,
I got
a lot of respect for 5.
Yeah, I love 5. And it's funny, too, that through this conversation, too, because the director I was going to pick, and it's kind of a technicality, is Steve Miner. Because Steve Miner did 2 and 3. And the thing is, if you go back and watch Part 3, I'm not going to say it's the best one, because it's not. But it's a very solid slasher movie. And that movie had no right to be that good, considering how much 3D stuff that Steve Miner was dealing with during that movie.
Exactly.
He turned out 2 really good slasher movies, man.
I don't know that Part 3 is, in my opinion, really that great. I like it. It's okay. I really wish somebody put a goddamn DVD out that 3D effects it worked.
Yeah.
But I'll agree with you wholeheartedly. With the 3D crap that he was saddled with, and having to shoot that sucker in 3D, it turned out way better than it had any right to be.
And I mean, that's another thing. If you guys have read, I know you have, John. I'm pretty sure you probably have too, Steve. But Crystal Lake Memories, the book, when they talk about Part 3 in that movie, you really see the crap that he was putting up with. He was using technology that nobody had ever used before. And he had to deal with that and make a decent enough movie for Paramount. You know, that's when the Friday 13ths were being made for Paramount. So, I mean, that's my pick, because I just think those two movies are as solid as they get when it comes to slasher movies.
I thought about him for a second when the question was asked, but then I reminded myself of Day of the Dead and discounted him.
Yeah, I think that's another Steve Miner. That's not the same guy. Not really, but in his own mind.
Again,
it has
right?
to. Yeah, this is my world.
This
yeah,
is
there's
the
two.
World where Jason has a background where he, like, has a car and.
Yeah, and he could drive wearing his tater sack. Yeah, it's, you know. But don't worry. It's the same world where a 50-year-old woman could stab through mattresses.
If you ever seen how sharp them needles are, yeah, you could, dude. Trust me. Man, that was a freaking arrow they used for hunting, dude.
Oh, whatever. Hey, you just like old women, John.
I do. I do love old women. I love all women. I love old women, though, because I'm a hottie for them. I'm going to go right to the crowd that thinks I'm like something special. Young girls look at me and I'm a fat old bald sucker.
But you clean up at bingo nights.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm the young stud.
He's a gilf chaser.
Yeah. 70-year-old lady looks at me and be like, he's awesome looking.
Oh, dude, I've witnessed that, actually. I've seen 70-year-old women gumming at you for minutes on end.
I'm telling you, brother. I might not get the best, but I get the best of the rest.
Best of the rest.
The best of the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So, all right. Another question? Who's got one? Steve.
What do you consider any of the movies, well, of the series, which ones do you think has a better sequel than the original?
I think that's easy for me.
Yeah.
Friday 13th, well, Part 2.
Yeah.
I personally, and I've already said it, I mean, well, no, I think my favorite Friday the 13th is probably still the original. I think consistently, though, of a series, I mean, Friday the 13th consistently hit him out of the ballpark. Not, I should say consistently, but I think Part 2 is a decent movie. It's not great. I have issues with it. I think Part 6 is a good sequel. I really do. Part 5 has its moments. Part 4 has its great gore, great moments. If we're talking franchises, aren't that many of them?
Yeah.
I'll tell you one, and I've started going back and watching these movies, but I actually think the best Nightmare on Elm Street might be, what is it, the new Nightmare one?
That's a good one.
Yeah, where they actually bring the real – it was a neat twist to it. I thought that was pretty interesting. A lot of people think the Sleepaway Camp sequels are better. I disagree with that.
Yeah.
So I guess my call would be the Nightmare on Elm Street. But then, you know, like, you guys don't really consider that a franchise, a slasher movie franchise. But if you do, that would have to be it. And,
I can't think of one, to be honest. I just kind of made that question up.
Okay, this is probably going to be an easy question to answer because there's a real obvious answer to it. There's actually a couple of really obvious answers to it. Most shocking or memorable moment in a slasher movie? The obvious answer, of course, but...
You know what? For me, the most memorable is the end of the original Halloween. That's one of the things that I can honestly say got me into horror films. That was one of the things that hooked me. I just was like... My mind was so blown from that as a young kid that it just... You know, I can't explain it, but it's something that got me completely wrapped up in horror. I mean, it was just something that it's creeped me out, but I was really drawn in by it, too, at the same time. So that was probably my most memorable. You know, but
that's been used so much that people don't realize how big of a deal it was for a horror film for the killer to get away scot-free.
Yeah.
That was a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And my shocking moments, definitely Sleepaway Camp.
Everyone remembers that the first time they've seen it.
And Friday the 13th as well. The original ending in Friday the 13th is just as good as any two.
Yeah, I don't know. Friday the 13th, well, you mean the ending.
The ending.
The boat.
With
the,
yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Hands down, definitely. What do you got, Steve?
Well, yeah, I agree with pretty much, you know, what Ed said. Sleepaway Camp has got the most shocking ending, at least in my view.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to go a little weird here, and it's not necessarily a slasher film, but there's a movie that came out, and a lot of people shit on it because of the look of the killers and the use of CGI, and that it's a newer movie. But there's a movie that really fucks with people. And it this is going to be a little weird, but it is, oh my God, I just lost it. It is Wrong Turn 2. You know, you guys have seen it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where they start to set up the one girl as the heroine and then all of a sudden she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you think the Henry Rollins character is going to die much earlier on than he does. I mean, this is a movie that keeps playing with you. And I'm not saying it's a great movie or it's the most shocking ever, but I do remember, you know, I'm sitting here thinking the one thing I remember about Wrong Turn 2 is it really got my attention when it killed off the one girl. And I just kind of went, huh, well, that was weird. I didn't see that coming. And it's kind of one of those moments that they just go, yeah, you thought you had it figured out. Watch this. Fuck you. You know?
Yeah, that's a good call. It's something different, that's for sure. It's been a while since I've watched it. I haven't seen it for a while.
And I haven't either. But and that just goes to show you, I haven't seen it in a long time, and most of the movie is kind of... I mean, I do like Henry Rollins. I think he's pretty funny in that. I thought he was funny in Feast as well. But
Rollins is the man.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was just one of those things that, you know, here I haven't watched it since it first came out, but that's the one thing I remember is how I felt when they just, like, had set the characters up, had set up all the... Because, you know, it's one of those movies that they have the characters. They're very obvious, at least you think they are, archetypes. They're very obvious where they're going with the story. And then they start making changes to the formula, and you're kind of like, wait a minute. That was quite strange. But, so that was that. Any more memorable moments?
I'm sure there's a lot of them, actually, if you think about it. I mean, the raft scene sticks out for me tremendously in The Burning. You know what I mean? That's another really good scene.
You know, the fun thing about that is, though, not to interrupt you, but if you think about the most memorable part about that raft scene, it's not even a gore effect. It's that shot of him holding the sphere. The shears.
That
from the back where you just have the outline of him. I mean, that's... I mean, I've already said more than one time here that I have problems with that movie, but that was I don't know if a director is sitting there, or if they're sitting there and they're taking the shots, or they're putting the shots up, but that there are times where if somebody wasn't thinking, let's make a really iconic looking shot, and they just end up with it on accident, it was a big deal.
You know what another one I would say, too, is the end scene of Black Christmas, where they show the girl with the bag over her head in the chair, and the chair's just going back and forth, and it just pans out from the window. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, you could hear, like, the kind of Christmassy music in the background, and it's just so quiet. And, like, I still remember, like, that movie's, like... You know, when you see the end of it, it's memorable because of the image, obviously, but you're like... Man, they never found out who he was. And then at first you're kind of like, yeah, I don't really like that. And then, like, the more you think about it, it's like, well, like, you know what? That does make it so much more creepy. And that makes that scene so much memorable. Because, like, because you know how, like, in most movies at the end of it, the last scene is, like, you know, them just panning away from the dead killer or an ambulance picking people up. Like in this movie, it's kind of like, it's a fuck you, but not in a bad way. It's like a fuck you. Like, you don't know what happened to the dude. He's still out there. And that's what makes the movie so creepy. And that part's so memorable to me. Otherwise it wouldn't have been so memorable.
Cool. Well, you got a question, Ed?
I think I'm good, man. My questions are about tapped out here.
What about you, Steve?
Yeah, just likewise.
Okay, well, I got a couple more. Let's hit them.
Yep.
Most overrated slasher, and this would be a movie that a lot of people really enjoy, that you either just don't get it or you think that they're on crack. Or maybe you think it's a decent movie, but it's reached some sort of cult classic status. You're just kind of like, I get it. I mean, it's okay movie, but I don't know why people are so over the top on it.
I hear a lot of people talk about Final Exam like that's some kind of classic.
Final Exam is awesome.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. That's one I would stick up for. I actually think Final Exam is one of the more underrated ones for sure.
Mm. Did you not like it, Steve?
Oh, I will be honest. I haven't seen it.
Oh.
I've got it, but I haven't watched it. I hear a lot of talk about that one.
Dude, it's the closest I've seen to somebody making Halloween again and making it well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people out there who really diss on it and don't like it, including a particular website that I've mentioned before that they don't like Final Exam, but they love some of these other movies that we've, like, not liked. But yeah, I mean, I have to agree with that. I watched it, and I do dig it. I know it bugs a lot of people that it's just a killer. He shows up, he kills people. There's no reason for it. But for me, that's like, cool. It's a killer that it's just basically, I'm here to slaughter people. How you doing?
Pretty much, yeah. It's nothing more than that.
I'll tell you, I mean, I've already mentioned this. I think one of the most overrated slashers, in my opinion, as far as people just going on and on and on about it, and I think it's partly, again, due to the fact that it wasn't available for a long time, is The Burning. I'm not saying The Burning's a bad film, I just think it gets mentioned with other films that are so much better than it. But then, you know, at the same time, it almost made Ed's top five list. So it's just interesting. Is some people really like movies, and I'm not shitting on the Burning, but I just think it's not. Personally, Ed, I mean, I think something like Nightmare and a Damaged Brain, or AKA Nightmare, some people just got the shorter title. I think that's a better movie than The Burning, but that's just me.
Yeah, they're different. You know what I mean? I think the thing about The Burning that strikes a chord with me so much is because the fact that the characters are so different. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more innocence in The Burning than in a lot of these other movies. I mean, they set you up to want to see these people die. And I think in The Burning, that's something they're clearly not doing, which I think is pretty interesting. And that's what makes the movie, like, you know, kind of different and cool. And it's not like when people say that it's a carbon copy of Friday the 13th, it's like, well, it's really not. I mean, it's not. It's based around the camp, and I could see that. But that, to me, is like saying the same thing with Sleepaway Camp. It's like, oh, it's a carbon copy of Friday the 13th. It's like, no, they're similar, but it's not a carbon copy. They're so vastly different in the mood and tone and everything that they're trying to do. Exactly. You know what I mean? And that's what makes them stand out to me. Yeah. But, you know, the overrated ones to me, like, honestly, you know, a lot of them go from overrated to underrated and back again. Like, I think Just Before Dawn's one of those ones. Like, that movie was underrated for a long time. Then when the DVD was released, everybody was talking about it. And then now it's kind of died down again. You know what I mean? So now it's probably a little bit underrated.
Well, and I love that movie, but if somebody wanted to say it's just as good as Friday the 13th, I'd be like, well, okay, dude, I love that movie, but no, you're crazy. I love the movie because it's got some unique stuff happening with it. But, yeah, I see what you're saying. I think people tend to – I don't know, man. There are movies that just people go apeshit over, and you're kind of like, meh, what? I mean, for me, I kind of had – I had an opposite reaction. For the longest time, I would just not – I didn't like Mad Men as much as other people did. And for a while, everyone was talking about Mad Men and how awesome it was. And this and that. And I'm like, it is a good movie, but I think you go too far sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? That's a perfect example, too, about what I was just going to say. Because you know what? I think one of the most overrated slasher films are the original Friday the 13th. And I'll tell you why. It is a good movie. It's very effective. It hit the marks. And it was one of the first films to really display the gore and what have you. But since 1980, I mean, I think you guys would both even agree with this, even though you picked it at number one. It doesn't hold up as well as it did at one point. And the thing about the movie, too, is, let's be honest, it's the number one movie in a franchise, okay? So a lot of people, and this is not you guys. I mean, I know that because I know how you guys are. But a lot of people say how much they love the first film, and they really don't. They love the sequels, but they don't really care about the first film. So that's why I think the first one's overrated, because I think a lot of people give it credit, and they don't really – they're just giving it credit because of the name, not because it isn't actually a good film. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean, for me, I love that movie. I mean, I do think – you know, I actually said something to you. We talked about this years ago – or not years ago, but months ago. And I actually said I thought Friday the 13th, the original film – would have actually had far more respect had there never been a sequel.
Oh, yeah.
It was my assertion that it would have been known as a horror classic as a classic film, a standalone film, and that in a way, in my opinion, that the original film was tarnished by some pretty less-than-stellar sequels, or not even that, it was sort of tarnished by the fact that it launched these formulaic slasher films. You know, and that's interesting because I tell you one that even suffered more. In my opinion, the first couple of Halloween films are classics. I think those two movies have suffered from all the shitty sequels.
Yeah, they
have. Not that all the sequels were shitty. Some of them were okay entries, but they were far less... I mean, if you compare Halloween and Friday the 13th, people like to rip on – there's some bad Friday the 13th sequels. Halloween by far as a whole has the shittiest list of sequels.
As far as slasher movies go, I think you're absolutely right there. I mean, it's just – because the first one to me is a classic. The second one to me is pretty much a classic. The third one, just take it out of the series. It doesn't have anything to do with it. But the fourth one, I think, is good. Five is horrible. Six is horrible. They're all either horrible or below average after that. There's never been another good one like four was.
Yeah, four was decent. And I agree with you. After four, they've been... I mean, I do have some enjoyment out of the Jamie Lee Curtis ones when she comes back. But they're pretty shitty. They are just pretty shitty. I mean, there's no quality control exercise there. So, and I know a lot of people want to rip on Friday the 13th, but, man, Halloween suffered that by far, far worse.
Well, you know what it was, too? I think that at the time, like, when they were making the Friday the 13th films, they were doing it pretty much pumping them out one after another, year after year. And you always had people around that cared about them. Like, Steve Miner worked on the first film. Then on the second one, he was the director. He put his care into it. Same thing with the third. Then the fourth film, they bring in Joseph Zito. Back comes Savini. He cared about it. Danny Steinman, same thing. And then it keeps going like that. But with the Halloween movies, they never did that.
No.
So you had the first movie, then the second movie that gets taken over by Rick Rosenthal, who is working with Carpenter, so he has respect for it. The third one, they wanted to do something completely different. The fourth one, they still had respect for it because they were bringing Michael Myers back into the franchise. Yeah. Then after that, they were just directors for hire. Nobody really had the respect that they should have had for the series, and that's why they're not as good.
You know, I think the big difference is Sean Cunningham.
Yeah.
Sean Cunningham stuck around. He let people make change, and he allowed people to take chances, which ended up with some bad movies. But Sean Cunningham stuck around. And you could say it was because it was a cash cow or whatever, but he did keep himself around. And was it Mustafa Akkad?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was just a moneymaker for his family.
Yes.
I don't really think they had the same care. Because Sean Cunningham was not just a producer. He was a filmmaker.
And there's another name, too, that if you read through the Crystal Lake Memories book, it's a name that doesn't get enough credit in the Friday the 13th series. Because he was the guy that was in charge of them. He was the guy that was pulling for them for the longest time. And that's Frank Mancuso and Frank Mancuso Jr. Those were the guys that really put these films into action and had enough sense to know that even though they were the producers on the film, that they would let the people who were making them make their film.
Yeah.
And that was important. And the Akkads weren't really as aware of that. Once John Carpenter distanced himself from the Halloween franchise, it started to go down. Once Sean Cunningham distanced himself from the franchise, there were still the Mancusos in there to kind of keep everything regulated, you know? So it's unfortunate that it happened that way, but I agree with you, man. The Halloween movies do not get nearly enough shit compared to the Friday the 13th series, at least.
So, and it seems like Steve can't get a word in his wise.
Hey. All
right.
Well, I mean, to me, it's just like whatever the next latest movie that's never been on DVD, it gets really overrated. Then when it comes, and then it passes.
A lot of hype. Okay, I'm going to start with Steve on this one. You ready, Steve? I got a question for you.
Hit me.
Okay. The favorite slasher movie that you don't think enough people know about. This would be something that you really enjoyed watching that people just seemingly just haven't seen because it's maybe not on DVD. Maybe it just never hit with an audience, that kind of thing. So maybe the next big one that might hit DVD and become overhyped.
Great. I actually have a great answer for this one, at least I think it is. And it goes by a couple different names. I think it was made in the mid-70s. I think it's called The Redeemer or The High School Reunion Massacre.
I just said really. I hadn't heard of this one. This is cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's got one of back in the day, it had a big old box, a VHS, and it had like a skull with a cap on it. And I always seen it there, but I never watched it because I figured it'd probably shit. But, cut to a couple, like 6 months ago, I got a copy from our buddy Jason Payne, and the movie has a lot of style to it. It really is something I think that if that was released, at least the horror nerds would probably really, really be surprised of how good it is.
Cool. And that was again. What was that again?
Let me run to my back room.
He has to go to the vaults.
Into the vault.
Actually, it's called just the Class Reunion Massacre or The Redeemer.
Cool.
You know what's hilarious, actually, Steve? I'm so happy you said this, by the way, because there is a VHS copy of this at a store nearby me right now, and I just kind of let it sit there, but I'm definitely going to go pick it up, I think, now after that. So I was curious about it, and I keep forgetting to look it up, and now that you said that, I'm definitely going to go get that.
I think it has a lot of style to it. I was very surprised about the style. And, you know, the story itself, it's pretty good, but nothing special, at least in, you know, the way I look at it. But it seems like it was a low-budget movie. But, I mean, it definitely surprised me.
Cool.
That's an excellent answer then, dude. You hooked me up with something I'm not going to go find, so.
Cool.
But, Ed.
Yes.
Favorite slasher nobody knows about.
I have two. Okay. Nightmare in a Damaged Brain is one that I think people would absolutely eat up if they actually got a chance to see it. And another one is one that we just brought up that some people don't like. And I think that a lot of people, if they would just sit down and give this one a chance, will really be able to appreciate what they're trying to do. And it's Final Exam. I think Final Exam is actually a really good example of slasher film making in the 80s. I think it's a great little slasher. It's very underrated. And it does, you know, it tries to go back and make a movie like Halloween. It's going for the suspense. It's not trying to go balls out on the gore. And you know, and that's why I kind of had two movies here, because one's more on the gore side and the other one's more on the suspense side. But those are my two picks, Final Exam and Nightmare in a Damaged Brain.
And I have one for you guys you need to check out. The one that I have that I think nobody knows about is a little something called The Final Terror. It's a cool backwoods slasher movie. I really enjoyed it. Got a kick out of it. It's got a great cast. I'm looking for the note that I had here for it. It's got Adrian Zemed, Daryl Hannah. It's got one of the guys from... The Sopranos is in it, but it's actually a really cool little backwoods slasher about some park rangers and some girls that go off, and there's not a huge body count with this movie, but there's a really cool killer. It's actually hunting the people, and the thing that I love about it is the body count's low because the characters in the movie don't do the typical standard stupid wander off by themselves to be slaughtered sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, I wouldn't say realistic, but it's really kind of a cool little slasher film. Not on DVD, only on VHS. You can sort of find it on the internet sometimes, but I don't advocate downloading things illegally, because that would be wrong and bad and wrong. Final Terror is a really cool little movie that if you get a chance to track it down, you should check it out. So.
Hey, John, I actually have another one, too, that I think you would probably agree with me on, because we've talked about this movie. It's kind of on the borderline of a slasher movie, you know, but I would say it falls enough in the category. It's a movie that's known under several titles. You can check it out, a cut version of it out on DVD through Mill Creek. It's called The Creeper, but the real name of it is called Rituals with Hal Holbrook. It's a Canadian-made, like, wilderness kind of movie. That movie is badass. I cannot wait. I'm finally going to get my hands on a copy of the uncut one, which I can't wait for. But I absolutely think that movie is so underrated.
Yeah, it's. I've seen the uncut one. It is pretty cool.
Nice.
Pretty cool. So, but yeah, definitely. That's another good one. So, I think we've talked to slashers to death here.
Nice.
Anything else you guys want to talk about?
Just waiting for Wasteland.
Hell yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it'll probably just be me. I'll do some site business, and then we'll let you guys go. So I just want to thank Ed and Steve for popping on and spending a couple hours chatting about some slasher films.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah.
Thank you, John.
And I can't wait to see you guys this weekend. It's going to be awesome.
Yep.
You know, meet Christina Lindbergh, hang out with Danny Steinman. Actually get to hear a live commentary for Friday the 13th, Part 5.
Oh, watch an Asian chick crush some beer cans with her private nasty parts.
Yeah.
Which I look forward to. You know me.
Yeah, well, I find that a little bit horrifying. But that's just me. Okay, well, hey, thanks, guys. And we'll be right back after these short messages. You're listening to the Gut Munchers Podcast.
While parked on a lonely country road on March 3rd, 1946, Samuel Fuller, age 24, and Linda Mae Jenkins, 19, were attacked by a man wearing a white hood over his head. They were dragged from their car and beaten, but both survived. Then on March 24, 1946, he struck again. This time, his victims were found dead. Only 21 days later, April 14, 1946, he killed Roy Allen, 17, and Peggy Loomis, only 15, in a city park. Yet he was to strike again and again. He was called the Phantom Killer. Now, 30 years later, most believe he still walks the streets of Texarkana, Arkansas. Charles B. Pierce brings to the giant screen one of the most incredible true stories ever filmed, The Town That Dreaded Sundown, starring Academy Award winner Ben Johnson from American International Pictures. The Town That Dreaded Sundown, rated R.
We've wasted another 3 hours listening to a Gut Munchers podcast. I really appreciate your time. I want to thank Steve for stopping by and participating. And let's not forget, Steve does the Eurocult podcast, which is actually pretty cool. Difficult to say, but pretty cool. And Ed. Ed does BloodTypeOnline.com, which is a great little website. I love it. I used to work over there for Ed and knock some reviews out for him back in the day. But BloodTypeOnline.com is a great website. And both Blood Type and Eurocult have links in our link section off of the Gut Munchers webpage. Speaking of exciting stuff, don't forget what we got going on over at Gut Munchers. We have a weekly webcomic. We have daily movie reviews. We have the Gut Munchers YouTube page, which is just launched and taken off. And we have the library, which is a place where we do a lot of magazine, comic book, and book reviews. Some of them genre-related, some of them, yeah, maybe not so much. But you never know what you're going to get at Gut Munchers, and I kind of like it that way. Few other plugs I want to put out there. Don't forget to check out my man, Brother D over at Mail Order Zombie. You heard his commercial earlier in the show, and that's a great show. Friend of the site. Good friend of the site. Also, Knock Monster does a Gore Boy radio podcast from England. Yeah, he's British, but I'll forgive him for that. But another good friend of the show, and you also heard his commercial this week, or this month, I should say. Well, not weekly. Good God. I can't imagine trying to do one of these every week. You know, I don't know that I have much more to say than that. We are, of course, Gut Munchers is a member of the Horror Podcasting Network, or the HPN, as we insiders like to call it. So check them out over at the Horror Podcasting Network. There's a little link on the front page of our site to check out the other podcasts that belong to this fine, fine organization, including, again, Mail Order Zombie and Brother D. So I think that's about it for this month's episode. Do check us out, though, because this is a special episode, so in a couple of weeks, episode 5 should be up, and it will have hopefully, a lot of convention reports from Cinema Wasteland in scenic Strongsville, Ohio. Looking forward to that. So I think that's about it. So again, thank you very much for wasting another almost 3 hours of your time listening to us, and we will catch you on the flip side. See you later. Bye.